Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, offering asset protection and security through insurance. Home, auto, boat, life. Information from a real live person who is in the same phone book as you. Petersburg Insurance at 772-3858.
Nancy?
Yes.
Jeff?
Here.
Kurt?
Here.
Mark?
Here.
Brandy?
Here.
Jay?
Here.
Eric?
Here.
Okay, we have a full assembly today. It's a regular assembly meeting at noon on February 5th, 2018. It's now time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, before we get started, I've got a little bit of a cold today, so if I have to have a sneezing attack or something, we'll have to take a little break, but excuse me if that happens. It's now time for the approval of minutes, and we want to entertain a motion for approval of minutes from January 2nd, January 16th, and January 19th of 2018. Is there a motion to approve those?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Stanton Greger, seconded by Member Walhooter, to approve the minutes from those three meetings in January. I don't see anybody want to make any changes, so all those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, those meeting minutes are approved. Now it's item four, amendment and approval of meeting agenda. And entertain a motion to approve today's meeting agenda or make amendments. Member Barole.
I would like to make an amendment and add a discussion item about the Open Meetings Act.
Okay. Under discussion, Member Morrell wants to talk about the Open Meetings Act. Okay. So remind me if I forget, somebody please. Any other amendments to today's meeting agenda, or do we want to move forward with it is as amended? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, public hearings. Today we have two public hearings, and the first public hearing is for Ordinance 2018-01. This is an ordinance amending Petersburg Municipal Code, Section 4.28.130, Senior Citizen Exemption, to authorize collection of application fees in order to cover the administrative costs of processing, issuing, and monitoring of senior citizen sales tax exemption cards. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to participate to item A under public hearings? Mr. Haverlick, would you please come to the podium?
Yeah, I'm John Haverlick, 1204 South Nordic, and I wanted to speak to the senior citizens exemption. My wife and I together in Social Security make a grand total of about $12,000 a year in income. And we could afford to pay property taxes and sales tax. And I urge you to consider charging for this exemption at least $150, $250 per person. And I know that's more than the cost of it, but you're not considering the cost of the businesses have to go through to keep all the paperwork to send it to you and the staff going through that paperwork on the tax exemption. So I urge you to charge, I would like to see $250 per card. And again, because of the cost, and we could afford it. In fact, since senior citizens cost the community so much, we're not paying our fair share now, and we need to. And I know you pay at least $200,000 to the assisted living in that to keep that going. And, we need to be, responsible for that. And we do use a lot more services with the hospital, the medical, the ambulance, fire, whatever, than, young people with kids. So we should be paying our fair share. So to me, it's only fair if we step up and do this. I'd like to see the tax done away with, but too many of us old people are greedy, so they won't go with that.
This public hearing is just in pertains to the tax exempt card itself, not the whole program.
Yeah.
So
But to me, it's all-inclusive. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Any other people in the audience that want to talk under the public hearing for Ordinance 2018-01, tax exempt from senior card? Okay, please state your name and who you represent, please.
Jim Roberts. I'm a senior, and I have nothing against a fee. But if you're going to have a fee, it needs to be fair and equitable. At $100 and even at $60, that's about 4 hours of labor. And that's $2,200 a year, two people working full times for a year, and, you know, issuing 50 cards or 550 cards. And that seems a little excessive. You know, if you want to change the program, that's fine, and it probably does need changing. But that's you're now into a tax, not a fee. The definition of the fee is to produce income or revenue to offset or cover the cost of a program. Even at an hour's worth of time per person, you're still at 14 weeks or 3 months per person full time. As an example, I came up, had a problem with my card this year. And I came up and we resolved it in about 15 minutes. They checked the database, issued a card and everything, and I was out in 15 minutes. And I would assume in the new system, you know, you send out a postcard, tell people to come in and pay or send their check in, whatever. So anyway, the other thing is that Jeff mentioned at one of the previous meetings, he was asking about whether to issue it every year or every 3 years, when, like it used to be. And the other thing he asked was, what was the process for a petition? And we never got into that discussion and never came back up during the meeting. And so I was thinking about that later, and the only thing I think of is someone had mentioned to Jeff about doing a petition if it got voted in. So you might want to consider the ramifications and the blowback on the assembly if the petition is done. So. Okay.
Thank you. Anybody else in the audience that wants to talk to this, Harvey, Mr. Gilliland? Will you please state your name.
Yes, sir, Harvey Gilliland, and I don't mind paying something for getting the tax exemption privileges, but it's my understanding that it costs $50 or $60 each time you make one of these things, which I think is kind of excessive. Seems to me like there's no need to have the thing expire every year. Let it expire when I expire. Nobody's going to be trying to use it if I'm gone. So it's kind of silly to have that cost. So I think the town should save reissuing the card to people that already have one. A lady told me a couple days ago that if you're going to keep issuing new cards, then she's going to have a new picture on the thing possibly, and she'd rather see the picture that she had on her card a few years ago. So anyway, save a few bucks and don't issue the thing every single year. That's silly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gilliland. Anybody else in the audience that wants to be part of the public hearing and testify for Ordinance 2018-01 on the senior tax exemption card fee? Okay, thank you for the ones who testified. That public hearing is closed. Now we're on to item 5B, and this is a public hearing on Ordinance 2018-02, an ordinance adopting a new Petersburg Municipal Code, Chapter 4.80, to impose a marine passenger fee in order to address the cost incurred by the borough for services and infrastructure rendered to cruise ships and cruise ship passengers visiting the borough. That's what this public hearing is on. Anybody interested in testifying? Okay, seeing no hands go up, the public hearings are now closed. Next item on the agenda is 6 bid awards. There are none today. Is there any views related to items on today's agenda? Any visitors have views? Please step forward, state your name and who you represent.
Good My name's Joe Nelson. I represent myself as a ratepayer, electric department ratepayer. So when you come to that part in the agenda that would speak to the reorganization of the department, I'd like to have a few words.
Mr. Nelson, could you give your opinions now? This is actually the time and the meeting that we have set aside for public comments, for views related to items on today's agenda.
Sure.
Thank you.
For those of you that don't know me or know me well, I'm the past power superintendent, retired last year. I began my career in 1970. I graduated from Montana State University with a degree in electrical engineering. I went to work in the heavy industry for about 3 years for the Anaconda Company. And then I started my electric utility career. Went to work for a medium-sized utility as a line extension engineer, designing power line extensions. This utility had about 40 employees, 5-line crews, and about 15,000 good size by Montana standards. I worked there for 13 years. The last 4 years I was there, I was the general manager, taking engineer to operations manager, engineering manager to general manager. And been heavy project management for a number of years, but also spent 5 years with a good-sized utility in Kalispell, Montana. It was a cooperative. I was the manager of engineering and operations. Started out with around 40 employees, and then after an acquisition, we ended up with 105 employees at the time that I left, and we had a large operation engineer department that I was the head of. The reason that I mention that is because those are kind of my credentials. I've been in the industry a long time. Awful lot about it that I do know. So hopefully when I speak to some of these subjects, we wouldn't have to go clear back as to why do I think that way or, you know, that sort of thing. I just wanted to get my credentials out there. A couple of things that out of the meeting on Friday, there seems to be some maybe not real clarification on the use of consultants, for instance. This utility is complex, let's say, compared to Wrangell, because we have a hydro. Hydro generation gets you into all kinds of things with FERC. FERC is an agency that's very difficult to keep happy. We are an agency that changes the requirements year by year. You have to stay on top of that. You have to hire consultants every now and then. Like every 5 years, they do what they call a Part 12 inspection, and that's coming up this year. So your need for consultants varies year to year, depending on what you're doing, how many projects you're tackling. So if you look at our budget, you'll see that it varied quite a bit. Will there always be a need for consultants with the an electric utility? Yes, there always will be. It's complex for any one individual. Even somebody with a background like mine that's pretty diversified can't know it all. So you have to have consultants. If you reorganize the way you're talking about reorganizing, will you have less of a need for consultants? No, just the opposite is true. There's a lot of things that I could do because of my background, experience, education, that we didn't need to hire a consultant for. So by reorganizing, scattering the responsibilities, you're going to increase your need. Other thing that came out was that there was supposed to be some money saved by doing this reorganization. When you stop to consider, let's just say you take my position, throw it out the window, so you're saving roughly $100,000 You're going to have to give Carl a raise. You're going to have to give Scott a raise. But beyond that, I heard those, but beyond that, you're going to have to be looking at a raise for Sue. Because my duties, the things that I was doing, will all have to be picked up by those individuals. Those are all union individuals, and like was mentioned, they're all subject to negotiation. So if you add duties, add responsibilities, you're obligated to sit down with the union, and the union's going to want more money. So is there money to be saved? No, there's no money to be saved. You take that, couple it with additional consultant costs, and the cost goes the other way. There was some discussion about safety, and it was kind of cast off as something that everybody's aware of and anybody can do. Certainly not the case. When I came here, there was not a culture of safety. There was not an atmosphere of safety. The line crew, for instance, was not using personal protective equipment. Their rubber goods that they rely upon for their lives were not being tested. Their equipment was not up to snuff. We were having accidents or near misses weekly. If you wanted to look at the lost time accident records when I came here in 2003, look at them for that. For late 1990s, early 2000, and then compare them with what we have today, you'll see that there's a distinct drop in the amount of lost time accidents, workers' comp, sort of thing. So there's more to safety than just having safety manuals, just having OSHA manuals. There's a lot more to that. There's a culture of safety. And so what we did, we started having regular safety meetings, which were not being done at the time. We started inviting a consultant in. Excuse me. This is taking way more than 3 minutes. Do you want me to?
If you could wrap it up, Joe, pretty quickly. I mean, this is all, I think, information that we should all hear.
Just one other thing. The utility in Wrangell is a basically a service crew, and they keep the lights on. Any construction that they do, they hire it out. We took a different attitude. We wanted to do the work here. We wanted the money to stay here. We wanted to be a viable utility so that when canneries or lumber mills, whoever came in, we could serve them. So we kept a larger staff, and we did the work here, and that enabled us to have an apprenticeship program. You can't have an apprenticeship program in Wrangell because they don't have it. Linemen in Wrangell are not necessarily linemen anyplace else. The linemen that we have here can go to work anywhere because they're journeyman linemen in the truest sense. The apprentices that we turned out here, local young men, can go to work anywhere, and they have. So it's something the community can be really proud of, that we did have an apprenticeship program, and it continues to be viable. So it's a difference in philosophy, I guess you'd say. I want our line crew to work hot because the trees up in Severson need to be trimmed again. I don't want them going up there and shutting the power off for a half a day while they trim those trees. I would rather that they use their certified bucket truck, their certified rubber goods, their tested and service certified hot sticks, and go up there and trim that line out in half the time, and the power's still on, and the meters are still turning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak under views unrelated to items on today's agenda? Mr. Havlick.
As
think I must have. I'm John Haverlick, 1204 South Nordic. I must have that oppositional defiant disorder or something, because I want to say the opposite of what Joe did, and I really thank Joe for all the years he put here, and he was excellent. But as I was mentioning before on the tax thing, I think we should all be paying our fair share. But before we should do that, you should be doing your fair share in cutting as much as you can out of this budget. And I think the reorganization that Steve came up with originally was the right way to go. And to me, it would save about $200,000 a year. If you look at, no one really, when you walked up to put out the position, you really didn't get more than three applicants. And you're probably going to have to go to 150 to get a new supervisor. And then if you look at benefits, that's $200,000. That's $1 million over 5 years. And I think that's only the start of what should be saved. You should be cutting other things, too. When I was on the assembly, I asked to cut back $200,000 on the school, which I know was a horrible thing to do. But if we would have, we would have had another $1 million in the secure schools account, because that was, you know, more than 5 years ago. And we're in a really bad shape. I was here in 86 when thousands of people lost their jobs and their homes. I was one of them. And we had no preparation for those budget cuts then. Now we do. We've had years of warning, and we're still not doing anything about it. And, you know, like I said, we should be paying our fair share in taxes, but unless you're doing some cutting, you know, it has to be a quid pro quo. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Haverlick. Is there any other views from people in the audience today that are unrelated to items on the agenda? Are we still on? I thought we were on to...
We're still on related.
Are we? Okay. Well,
yeah.
My bad.
My name is Suzanne Wood, and I'd like to speak to the issue of power and light. Unfortunately, I don't have an agenda, so I don't know the proper title, but I'm for a successor to Joe Nelson's power and light position. I think we need the expertise. We have too much at stake in the community. You take the harbor, for example. We live out the road at 6.5 miles, so when our power goes out, power in town may still be on. But being that this is a full-on winter, it's nice to know that the boat is, in fact, still alive with power. But... over the years, I've come to appreciate the power, and back when Cascade Creek LLC was doing their thing of wanting to expand out at Thomas Bay, I had gone to see Joe just to basically get a better understanding of the fundamentals of the bigger picture, and was very impressed with the background and basically how Petersburg had come to be electrified. And I think there are too many millions of dollars down in the harbor and infrastructure at large in Petersburg to think that it's a done deal and everything is fine for the future. It's an ongoing upgrade of infrastructure. We need the know-how. We need to have lower-level employees in the wings in a training capacity to succeed higher-ups. And I think the nickel and diming, personally, the nickel and diming that's in the discussion is not correct. I think the wrong people leading the conversation are... leading it to a place where technology and state-of-the-art are not part of the discussion. And what happened during Joe's tenure with going through and revamping the system and making sure systems were in place, and I live out at 6.5 miles, so we had power outages because of down trees and down lines, that sort of thing. While in town, life could go on with the generator. And that the outages have decreased over time because the system's been upgraded. But that's through know-how. That's not through cost savings so that, I mean, you look across the board in Petersburg, we do not have leadership in the different departments of people that don't know the technology. And with power and light, you need to have people and know-how. And a successor to Joe, in my opinion, is necessary to safeguard the town electrically. And I'm thinking that the nickel and dimes that are being spoken of to be saved here, in my opinion, are misguided because there's too much at stake. When you go down to the harbor, you go across town with the infrastructure everybody has. You need to have the technology and the know-how from the top down. And that's what I have to say.
Thank you for your testimony. And we are still on visitors' views related to any items on today's agenda. I don't know how I got ahead of myself there, but is there any other visitors in the audience with views related to agenda items today? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to item 8. And that's visitors' views unrelated to any items on today's agenda. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to unrelated items? Mr. Whitethorn, please state your name and who you represent.
My name is David Whitethorn. I represent myself. It's 12:30. It's my lunch hour. I don't know if you guys can take the opportunity to reschedule your guys' meetings so the working people can come here instead of have to give up their lunch hour. Or come here at 5 o'clock like the night before. I had to shut my business down early to make your guys' meeting. I don't know if you guys would consider your meetings at 6 in the evening instead of noon. It would sure work for some working folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience with views that are unrelated to items on today's agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to board, commission, and committee reports. There are none today. There's no items on the consent agenda. Now we're on to report of other officers, and A is a report from our auditor, an audit report. So you're still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You're going to get the microphone over here. So, Jody, do you need to help with any of this, or... Okay, and I missed who we have on the line here. So this is our auditor from BDO.
Yep, Sam Thompson.
Can you you can start your report if you'd like.
All right, well, thank you, members of the Assembly, for the opportunity to present today. And I'd just like to start with saying a big thanks for allowing BDO the opportunity to continue to serve the borough as auditor. I believe... we've been doing it for a number of years, going back to the days when we were Macunda Cottrell and continuing as we became BDO. We also have the opportunity to serve the borough and serve other residents of Petersburg by auditing the school district and the medical center and the mental health services agency as well. I'd like to say a big thank you to Jody Tao and the entire finance department, Janet, Ann, and Cammy for all their help with the audit this year. They were very helpful and getting us everything we requested and answering all our questions and made it a very smooth process as it usually is. So before, there's two documents. I'm not sure if members of the Assembly have them in front of you, but they are, one's labeled an audit wrap-up document and the other is a copy of the financial statements. So if you have those documents, that's great. If not, you'll still be able to get the major points in my presentation. But I'll begin with discussing items in the audit wrap-up document. Now, these are items that are required by our professional standards that we communicate to you, those who are charged with governance. And it really just gives a quick rundown of the results and conclusions of our audit. So to start off with, we issued an unmodified opinion on the financial statements. Unmodified opinion is the highest level of assurance we can professionally provide. You could also think of it as a clean opinion.
It's the A grade that you can get. It means that the numbers that we found in the financial statements were accurate, reasonably accurate. Now, it's not possible for us to do an audit in absolute terms, but we do audit within materiality to obtain that reasonable assurance that the financial statements are correctly stated. Some other important points to point out in the audit wrap-up, there are no new accounting pronouncements that were applicable to the borough in fiscal year 17. There's no changes to the borough's significant accounting estimates. We did not note or not made aware of any significant unusual transactions or any transactions that lacked any kind of authoritative guidance. Now, we did note 10 corrections that were made from the trial balance that was originally provided to us at the start of the audit. Most of those corrections were similar to how they had been in years past. None of those would we consider to be significant. The most notable entry, though, was we assisted in helping the borough record the impact of a bond refunding entry that was done during the year. And another large entry that was recorded after the fact was to adjust the books for the pension liability figures as of June 30th, 2017. There were two corrections that we identified that were not posted by management. And both of these entries related to information that was obtained in 2017 that went back to prior years. And in our decision, not posting those entries was fine. It did not affect the opinion in any way, shape, or form. The amounts were not material, and it prevented having to restate prior year balances for immaterial amounts. So we concur with the finance department's decision to not post those entries. Another item on our audit is we perform what's known as a group audit, and what that means is there's certain auditing standards that the borough has to abide by in its financial reporting as it relates to Petersburg School District and Petersburg Medical Center, since those are considered components of the borough. Because of that, you will see their financial information also presented in the borough's financial statements. BDO performed the audits of Petersburg School District and Petersburg Medical Center and issued unmodified opinions for both those entities, just like we did for the borough as a whole. One of the required parts of our audit is that we review internal controls over financial reporting. Now, we do not issue an opinion over internal controls, but if we become aware of any weaknesses or significant deficiencies related to those controls, we'd have to report those and bring those to your attention. So in our review of the internal controls over financial reporting, we did not note any deficiencies that require any reporting or communication to you members of the board. We encountered no disagreements with management throughout the audit. All records that we requested were provided to us in a reasonable amount of time. All our questions were answered. And that's the summary of the information for the fiscal year 17 audit wrap-up. I would like to spend a couple minutes just talking about some significant accounting pronouncements that will come down in future years and the impact that they may have on the borough's financial statements. So for this fiscal year that we're in right now, 2018, for the June 2018 financial statements, the borough will need to adopt what's known as GASB Statement 75. And what this will require is the borough will have to record on its financial statements its portion of the PERS net OPEB liability. So OPEB is an acronym that stands for Other Post-Employment Benefits. And what this really means is it's the PERS pension liability related to health care benefits that PERS is required to provide to its retirees. So if you remember a couple of years back in 2015, the borough had to adopt what was known as GASB Statement 68 and record a large liability on its financial statements. Well, 68 related directly to just the pension portion of PERS. Now, 75 is very similar, except it's for the health care or the other post-employment benefit side of PERS. So the actual amount of the liability is not known at this time. And from our discussions that we've had with the state of Alaska, I would expect the amount to be less than the pension liability. You know, as you'll see in a few minutes, pension liability is very large. The OPEB liability hopefully will be less than that, but I still expect it to be in the millions of dollar range. So it will be a material amount, and it will be large. But similar to the PERS pension liability, it doesn't reflect an actual cash balance that is due at any particular point in time. The borough will continue to make its annual or every pay period contribution into PERS as they've been doing since the inception of the plan. That's currently how it's how it stands with the state, but if that were to change and a specific payment would be required on the OPEB liability, that's what that amount will represent at that time. Another new accounting pronouncement that's not going to be out until fiscal year 2021 is GASB Statement 87, the leasing standard. And what this will require is the borough will have to put on its books either an asset or a liability related to any operating leases that they currently have or more than a year in duration. Now, currently operating leases don't hit the balance sheet. Any revenue or expense related to them just gets recognized in the current year. On the income statement, 87 will change that, and if the borough is sponsoring a lease, they're the lessor, they'll record an asset. If they're the lessee, they'll record a liability. We have a couple years on that, though, not till 2021, and that's been a new accounting rule that's been adopted for all sorts of organizations, and governments are just getting on board with that now, and we'll roll that out in a few years. So that's the summary of the audit wrap-up document. Now, if everyone has a copy of the financial statements, I'll go over some of those numbers as well. So the financial statements, to start on pages one through three, it's a BDO's audit report. Now, this is the only document in the financial statements that is 100% the responsibility of BDO. The rest of the financial statements are the responsibility of management, and we as independent auditors performed an audit of those numbers and provided our opinion in these three pages. And as I mentioned earlier, we issued an unmodified opinion over the financial statements, which is the highest level of assurance which we can professionally render. Starting with page 20, you'll see the net position of the borough. And at June 30, 2017, the borough's ending net position for government-wide was $132,529,626. So you can take a net position as like equity in a for-profit setting. Of that $132 million, $111 million of it was comprised of capital assets, less related long-term debt that was used to finance those capital assets. $3.7 million was restricted in use for school support and road improvements. So that leaves $17,587,000 that was considered unrestricted and available for use as the assembly best seen fit as of June 30, 2017. Another important number I like to highlight on the balance sheet is the amount of long-term debt that this consists of bonds and loans payable the borough had on their books. Total is about $16.3 million. So just to have that number in the back of your head and compare to where it is versus the amount of unrestricted net position that you have. I think that's a good healthy ratio right there, that you have more unrestricted net position at year end than you have total debt outstanding. Going to page 21, this is a statement of activities, or you can think of this as an income statement. The borough's change in net position for the year was positive, $659,000. That's always good to see. For the revenues, the most significant revenue source for the borough was the property and sales tax revenue. Came in at about $6.1 million for 2017. Other major sources of revenue were capital grants. Now, these are funds that were provided by the state of Alaska to help finance major construction projects, the two largest ones being the new administrative and public safety building and then harbor construction and improvement projects that were done in 2017. Other major sources of state funding were, of course, the dollars that the state provides for the debt retirement program to help make principal interest payments on outstanding municipal bonds, and also the borough's share of fish tax revenues and the community revenue sharing dollars. On page 22, near the fund financial statements, so starting with the governmental funds, you'll see the general fund had a total fund balance of just over $4 million at year end. So this entire amount, less for $73,000, and it was held up in prepaid insurance, is considered unassigned or available for the assembly to use as they best see fit at year end. And to put this $4 million number into perspective, it accounts for about 5.5 months worth of general fund expenditures. So if you were to, you know, think of a doomsday scenario in which the general fund didn't receive a single dollar of income for any period of time and still have the same number of expenses that they've had in prior years, you'd be able to cover about 5.5 months worth of general fund expenditures with the amount of unassigned fund balance you have left at year end. I think that's a good healthy amount for a community with the size and characteristics of Petersburg. You'll see that other major fund, other governmental major fund is the Police, Jail, and Administrative Building Capital Project Fund. Now, it shows a small deficit of fund balance at year end, and this is just due to a timing difference between liabilities and had to be recorded in fiscal year 17 versus having available resources to pay those liabilities. Going to page 24, you'll see that this is the income statement for your governmental funds. The general fund had a positive change in fund balance for the year of $155,000. Now, I think a number that kind of stands out is the negative net change in fund balance for the Police, Jail, Admin, Building, Capital Project Fund. Fund balance decreased by $2.8 million. I think this was anticipated. The fund had received financial resources in prior years, kind of building up for expenditures that were incurred in 17 to help finish and finance the construction of the new facility. Total non-major funds had a decrease in fund balance, and this is mostly due to transfers out from the non-major funds, such as the Property Development Fund and the Forestry Receipts Fund, to fund operating costs and construction that was recognized in other funds. Other important parts of the financial statements to touch on are the proprietary funds, or these are your enterprise fund activities. So if you would like to go to page 28, I show some of the numbers there. So all funds had a loss in operations in fiscal year 17. But I think it's important to point out that as with prior years, most of these losses are due to depreciation, which is a non-cash expense. So if you back out depreciation on a cash basis, these funds are operating on a positive amount. However, it is important to note, though, that while depreciation does not represent cash out the door, depreciation does represent a decline in asset value. And with that decline in asset value, it can represent a potential decline in service potential. So you can think of depreciation as the amount that you're going to have to pay in future years with cash to cover the cost to improve or replace these existing infrastructure items. Page 30. The cash flow statements for the proprietary funds, and the focus on cash from operating activities were all positive except for the assisted living fund. Operating activities, these are amounts that the funds brought in from customers, less amounts paid out to suppliers and employees. Overall, accounting for operating activities, capital financing activities, and investing activities, cash flow is positive for all funds except the Harbor Fund and the assisted living fund. So to put that in perspective, this is where the cash is going for these funds throughout fiscal year 17, and you can see the balances that the funds had in cash at year end to help cover costs in future periods. Now, the financial statements, as you can see, are quite long and quite detailed, but I think these are the highlights. Overall, I think the borough finished 17 on a positive note financially. The net position that was available at the government-wide level was strong, as was fund balance at the governmental fund level. Cash flows overall were positive. When you look at the borough's assets versus the amount of liabilities that year, and I think it's a good, healthy ratio there. Some numbers to point out, though, in the future, though, it remains to be seen what the state will do on its with its capital budget. In terms of capital project funding coming in the future periods, that can be a question mark there, so take that into consideration. But overall, I feel like the borough did a good job managing its financial resources throughout fiscal year 17, and I think the financial statements reflect that. So with that, that's the summary of my prepared remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the audit or any numbers in the financial statements if you have any at this time.
Is there any questions by the Assembly? I don't see anybody putting their hand up, so thank you for your report. We'll talk to you again next year.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Next item on the agenda under report of other officers is motor pool vehicle replacement program, and Carl Hagerman has a presentation for us.
Thank you. Assembly member, I'd like to go over the replacement operations in the motor pool. This is actually part of a much larger presentation, but in recognition of the long agenda today, I was only going to go through the second half of this, which pertains to the replacement. Came in. I do want to offer that I'll try to get through this as quickly as possible in recognition of the agenda, and if at any time the assembly is satisfied with things and wants to cut me off and move on with the agenda, that's fine. I'll take questions at any time, including after the meeting, by email or however you want to get a hold of me. So anyway, moving on. So in this presentation, we'll talk about the replacement program in the motor pool. The replacement program is proactive, meaning that we forward fund our purchases in the motor pool. It maintains a higher level of reliability and safety for all the departments and our employees. We have a good replacement program in place. A long time ago, before this was in place, replacements required an annual request directly to the assembly for capital outlays, which was sometimes met with approval and sometimes not. We'll go in here. But anyway, the program that Petersburg has is developed into a very proactive program, and other communities have told me how much they would like to have something like Petersburg has in place. So the replacement account that is maintained at the end of FY17, the balance was about $4.4 million. That money is set aside strictly for replacements of equipment and vehicles. The annual contributions into that account are calculated for every active unit in our fleet separately. Vehicles that are in reserve status are going to be surplus or sold, historical units, and small tools and equipment are generally not included in the replacement program. If the unit is not included in the program and requires, and it is, a department wants to buy something, that requires that department head to come to the assembly and ask for a capital outlay. So again, to talk a little more about contributions, so each user department is charged monthly to maintain their replacement account. The charge is based on expected replacement costs and lifespan of that unit. Every vehicle or piece of equipment has a lifespan. some of those charges are broken out over its life. And the goal is to achieve full funding for its replacement by the end of its projected lifespan. Show you how we come up with the contribution amount. So we take the replacement cost, or the replacement cost is the original purchase price plus 3% inflationary adjustment per year of its lifespan. So as an example, we've got a $20,000 purchase, a 10-year lifespan. We compound 3% per year. So the replacement cost of that unit turns into $26,878. So we just divide, simple math, divide that amount by the lifespan, come up with a contribution per month of $223. So that money goes into the replacement account. And that happens for every piece of equipment that the borough owns that's in the replacement fund. So currently, all the departments are contributing at levels between 40 and 100% of the ideal vehicle contributions. Let me explain that a little bit. Because we have such a large balance in that fund, we started seeing that do we really need to grow this fund indefinitely to replace every piece of equipment in 1 year? That's never going to happen. So because all these purchases are spread out, you know, there's some this year, some next year, some 5 years from now, we came to a realization that we can decrease the fund balance but still have enough money to replace equipment when we need to. So we started doing a variable contribution amount based on their fleet size, you know, when it was going to be replaced, different things. And that that move right there, decreasing the amount of contributions, has spent down the fund. So it isn't growing out of control. And we've saved over $2 million in the last 6 years because of that. And that money is money that would have been put in this fund into a savings account, but either was saved outright or was able to be put in some other operational need of the department. So it's real dollars that were saved. So the finance department does keep track of the count, of course. But the motor pool in my office, we have a spreadsheet. It's a massive spreadsheet. It has every piece of equipment on it and every separate replacement contribution and calculation is in that spreadsheet. So we keep very close tabs on this. It helps us determine what we're going to charge each department on a monthly basis. And also lets us plan in the future as far as to seeing what the contributions are going to be and how much we can reduce that ideal or the contributions from ideal. And then the revenues from any unit that we dispose of or sell goes back into the fund to that department or that that unit specifically. So to talk about the replacement process, when we get to the point where we're going to look at replacing a vehicle, it's important to note that there's never an automatic replacement. Just because it reaches the end of its projected lifespan doesn't mean that we're going to replace it. We evaluate every single unit that comes up for replacement to see if we should or should not. So the lifespan typically on various equipment, light-duty vehicles, 10 to 12 years, police cars, 4 to 6 years, fire trucks, 20 to 25 years, heavy equipment, 10 years, up to 25 years, depending on how much use it is every year. So after a unit is purchased, the replacement costs calculated, contributions commence, and the balance in contributions are adjusted after any revenue from old vehicles or units are sold. So during the lifespan of the unit, the motor pool shop performs regular preventive maintenance on every vehicle to ensure reliability, safety, and extend its life, keep those units on the road as long as possible. And rarely do we see units that fail prior to their projected lifespan or life cycle, but if there is a catastrophic failure, which has happened, it usually happens after a unit has already been extended. So we've already put the money into the account to replace it, and we're picking up the inflationary costs at that point. But the maintenance program does keep these units in service for at least their life cycle and many times longer. So when a unit reaches the end of its life cycle, we start looking at its replacement during the budget preparation process. So the unit is inspected and evaluated by the mechanics. And if the unit's in reasonable condition with a few maintenance needs, we haven't been spending a lot of money on it, it'll be recommended for extension, usually 5 years. If maintenance needs are extensive, we've had a large repair in the last year, then we start looking at it a little closer. If we see that the potential maintenance costs in the next year are going to be high, we look at other factors to help us make a decision on whether to replace or not. We look at maintenance history, see if there's recurring problems. We've got a lemon or a model that has a recurring problem during the manufacturing process or something like that. We look at residual value. If we know there's a large ticket item like a transmission coming up, and that's going to be worth more than 70% of its replacement or its residual value on the market, then we look at replacement. Residual value can be used as a trade-in on a new unit sometimes. So look at that. Reliability, is the unit going to be reliable to the user department, and is the mission of the unit critical to public safety? That's a pretty important factor at times, depending on what we're looking at replacing. Continue, we're looking at safety. Is the unit still safe to use? Cost of the new unit. Is the new unit sometimes, even though we add inflation to the replacement contributions, sometimes the actual inflation outpaces what we contribute. So we have to look at that, make sure we have enough money in the account to actually buy a new piece of equipment. And then we look at the actual use. If it's very high or critical, then we are on the safe side and recommend replacement. Or if it's a low use, less critical, then we can usually extend it without risking a whole lot to the operations of the borough. When we do recommend an extension, we also say how long it should be extended. Again, that's one between 1 and 5 years. There's also always some risk that the unit might not reach its new life cycle date. Because of the maintenance program, we head into it with our eyes open and hoping to achieve that new date. The replacement value is recalculated, and annual contributions are adjusted, usually down quite a bit, because we're only looking at that inflationary amount and not the building up the principal for the purchase. So extension of a unit or several units usually brings the budget down quite a bit, because we're only looking at trying to cover inflation and not a principal amount. So once, even after we get to the end of an extended period of the life cycle, we still do another evaluation. Again, there's no automatics. Even when you extend a vehicle, we look at evaluating that unit again, and it could be extended again. So once replacement is recommended, that replacement needs to be approved by the borough manager through the budget process and also the assembly. Replacements not included in the budget are subject to supplemental budget ordinance process during the fiscal year. It has happened. We don't like it to happen. We like to plan ahead, but sometimes it will. So after the replacement is recommended, if approved, we'll plan on purchasing a new unit once the fiscal year comes about. We'll go through a bid process or a cooperative purchasing agreement, also known as piggybacking, to get that unit. And if not approved, the unit is extended 1 year unless another time frame is specifically identified. A little history up to FY17 on the replacements and extensions. You'll see in FY02 we had quite a number of replacements. That number slowly decreased to the point where the extensions actually have risen up, and I think this is a good graphic to show the effectiveness of the maintenance program. We're seeing a lot less vehicles needing to be replaced at the end of their actual life cycle. We're getting more, squeezing more years out of those vehicles on a regular basis. Quick couple slides on the purchasing process. A bid process is what we've traditionally gone with here in Petersburg, which is involved developing a specification with the user department. We're advertising, respond to bidders' questions. We have a bid opening. We recommend award to the assembly and seek approval. We issue a purchase order and wait for the unit to be built and accept delivery. It's usually a six-month process minimum. Can extend to 10 or 11 months or even longer, some more complex equipment. Cooperative purchasing option we've been using more and more recently. It does have some advantages in saving a lot of time up front that equipment and vehicle manufacturers are providing pricing to. It's a competitive pricing through national organizations that allow municipalities to utilize that competitive bid process, but cut the amount of time in order to developing a specific specification and going through the bid process. The pricing is already known. The contracts allow cooperative purchasing, and so it streamlines the process quite a bit. And we still have to wait for the units to be built, but saving time up front is worthwhile. So after units are replaced, we have a couple ways to surplus them. We either do an outcry auction, sell them online, or by sealed bid. We can trade them in as part of the purchasing agreement. That has happened in the past. Have retained reserve vehicles at times if it exists and approval is gained by the assembly. Just quickly, I've got a replacement example just to kind of go through this. The police truck has gotten some press recently, so I thought I would go through that. So this unit is number 86 in our fleet, used for normal patrols in the community, outlying areas. Historically, this has been an SUV, but the department sought a crew cab pickup for this replacement to increase remote access capabilities and utility function, in addition to normal patrol duties. So the truck has all the accessories needed for an effective patrol vehicle, all the normal goodies, but also some increased utility for cleaning up messy issues and towing the emergency operations trailer if it was needed. Some background information. The previous SUV was purchased in fiscal year 2008. We spent $40,700 on that. At that time, we started contributions and amassed the amount of $54,700, which is the budget for this purchase. So a similar SUV that from the unit that we replaced was purchased last year. For $53,000. This replacement cost, the truck actually cost us $46,800. So we saved a little bit there, and I'll get into how we did that. But the amount available in the police department's portion of the replacement account was $64,000, so we're sitting good for the budget. The evaluation that we go through for all vehicles and includes these items. We look at the engine, get the drivetrain, body chassis, electrical, heating, cleaning, on a police car. We look at the other accessories that are needed for a patrol vehicle to make sure they're operating correctly. Other research on this vehicle, reliability is a high priority for public safety risk. So that was a big part of the evaluation. Public safety, again, high priority. Residual value on this unit is low because of the high miles that was on it. It's a 10-year-old police car, which is actually very rare. Usually those are replaced in between 4 and 6 years. So this unit had a lot of miles on it. Cost of the unit, the new unit, was within budgetary pricing, and the account could afford it. The maintenance costs of the unit were moderately high, and the unit had not been 100% reliable for patrol duties, but it was requested that the police department retain the unit as a reserve vehicle. They'd found in the last few years, because of the ongoing effort to try and stem the drug problem at Petersburg, that they had outside law enforcement agencies coming to town for larger operations, and they felt it would be handy to have an extra rig for those events. So keeping this unit as a reserve and basically having it parked but available for those doesn't cost us a whole lot of money, but comes in very handy when the need arises. So that request was made to the assembly and was approved in last year's budget process. We advertised or went through a cooperative purchasing with the state, bought the truck from Kendall Ford of Anchorage. We saved quite a bit on the cost by reusing accessories from an older patrol vehicle, camera system that we used, gun rack, computer mounts. All those things added together saved us about $8,000, a little over $8,000 on accessories for that new vehicle. In addition, we had the police department had a Homeland Security grant to pay for the radio and installation on the unit, which was another savings of $5,400 to the borough. Saved about half of the amount on shipping as it would to get the unit from Anchorage. Normally, to barge a truck from Anchorage, it has to go all the way to Seattle and back up. It costs about $2,400. Instead, we sent an officer to Anchorage to pick up the truck and drove it to Skagway, got on the ferry for a cost of about $1,200. So we saved some money there. The total cost of that truck with the shipping cost to Petersburg was a little over $48,000. And again, the budget was $54,000. So this is basically the end. It's a summary. The motor pool strives to ensure unit reliability, provide essential services in support of all other borough equipment needs, and stretch capital equipment dollars to the benefit of the borough and the community. All replacement recommendations are made with justifications based on research, historical data, and economic values. I know you got a long meeting, but I'll take any questions you got.
Any questions of Mr. Hedron? Member Mucci?
And only, I don't know if it's a question or a statement, but you know, all the decisions to replace the vehicle from the city they finally go through the borough manager as well as the city assembly or the borough assembly.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I have one question, Carl. When the vehicles go into the shop and they get worked on by the mechanics, the enterprise funded, I guess, owns the vehicle, gets charged for the work that's performed by the motor pool shop? Is that how that works?
It's not just enterprise funds. It's any department that owns fleet equipment. If it's the public works department and it goes in the shop, then the public works department actually has an account in their budget that pays for that work. The same is true of any other department: fire, water, wastewater, power and light. Any department that has a vehicle that goes in the shop pays that repair bill. Just like the motor pool, we're a regular business.
Right. And what's the rate we pay an hour for mechanics? Is that
$85 an hour?
$85?
Yeah. Right.
Just kind of curious. Thanks. Any other questions of Mr. Hickerman?
Yep.
Mr. Member Castro?
Thank you. Yeah. Referring back to the graph you showed with the annual replacement or extension of vehicles, What do you feel, that since the borough is extending its the service life, it seems, in these vehicles more in recent years, do you think that's thanks to the excellent mechanics we have on staff or just newer, higher quality vehicles being purchased?
Well, I don't know if either of those are certainly have good mechanics, but I think it's just the regular schedule of looking at those vehicles on a continual basis to make sure that they're running right, that any issues that do come up are addressed right away so they don't get out of hand. It's a good program, and because we do have a schedule for when those things come in, and we maintain that schedule pretty rigorously, things don't get out of hand, and we're able to keep on top of any maintenance items that come up.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Thank you.
Member Stanton-Greger.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Hagerman, for taking the time to give this presentation today, and thank you for running an efficient and fiscally responsible motor pool. It is appreciated.
Any other questions before we move on? All right, thank you. Carl, we'll give you a little bit of time to reorganize, unless it's fine if it's left there, as far as I'm concerned, but. Yes.
After the manager's report, take five.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay. Thank you.
So Member Stanton-Greger just asked if we could take a break after the manager's report, and I was thinking the same thing. So we have the mayor's report coming up, and during that mayor's report, I might, if I overlook anything from the trip to D.C., maybe Liz Kabura can fill in. And we did get a summary paper that I asked for from our lobbyist, and everybody was emailed that, and we might touch on that a little bit here in the report. But anyway, getting on to the mayor's report, first of all, I'll do, it's not in order, but seeking letters of interest. The Petersburg Borough is seeking letters of interest from qualified borough residents to serve our community by filling a vacant seat on the Public Safety Advisory Board until October 28th municipal election. And I have a question for the deputy borough clerk on that. If we appoint Mark DeCillo, will that vacancy be gone then?
Yes, I believe that's true.
Okay, so we might not. We'll see in the next meeting. Anyway, in addition, the Historic Preservation Committee has two vacant seats, one for an archaeologist or at-large member with a term ending 12/31/2020, one for an assembly member representative with a term ending 12/31/2019. And those letters of interest, if someone is so inclined, may be submitted to the borough clerk via mail to Box 329, Petersburg, Alaska, or email to dthompson@petersburgak.gov, or just bring them into the office at 12 South Nordic Drive. Back up here. And then we've had some communications with Mr. Zimmerman, the district ranger. They're going to start a Central Tongass landscape level analysis project this year. The areas for the CTLLA is the acronym. Project encompasses all of the islands and North American mainland within the Petersburg and Wrangell ranger districts, including but not limited to Mitkoff, Kuprinoff, QU, Wrangell, Zirimbo, and Edelin Island. A notice of intent to publish an EIS is projected to be published in the Federal Register April of 2018, and that will initiate the NEPA process. Management activities that could be considered in this proposed action include timber harvest, including old growth, commercial harvest, young growth, commercial harvest, young growth, pre-commercial thinning treatments, and wildlife habitat improvement treatments, watershed improvements, and sustainable recreation management. So it's going to be pretty interesting, and there will be public meetings in all of the communities, and field data will be collected during the summer of 2018 to help refine project design and information and inform the analysis that will be displayed in the EIS. So our D.C. trip, PEDC Director Liz Cabrera and I traveled to Washington, D.C., and we had some pretty good meetings. We met with the Coast Guard, Corps of Engineers, State Department, and that was the first day. Then the next day we met with our congressional delegation, Senator Murkowski, Sullivan, and Congressman Young. The first meeting wasn't very optimistic. As you all know, we're concerned about losing our Coast Guard cutter, the Anacapa, in 2022, I believe is the date. So we talked to the Coast Guard personnel, and Liz and I and our lobbyist were there, Brad Gilman, and I asked the question if they took into consideration the financial impact of taking an asset like that out of a community, and they said that wasn't part of their mission. So then this is what they said. The U.S. Coast Guard officials stated that it was not in their mission to mitigate the economic impact to communities or reorganization. And then Mr. Gilman brought up kind of a plan we've been kicking around, like to move a small boat fleet in to backfill for the Anacapa or maybe get a buoy tender here. And they kind of looked at us with a blank look. So after we left that meeting, we weren't very optimistic. But after the next day, we met with our congressional delegation, and Senator Sullivan was adamant about getting something to backfill that spot. I'm not sure what it will be, but we've got 4 years to work on that process. And Senator Sullivan and Congressman Young felt the same way. So back to the South Harbor dredging project was another topic we talked about. When we were visiting with the Corps of Engineers, I think Liz brought up, and I touched on it as well, is why we have to, our dredge spoils, before we can put them upland, they have to meet a level. So the level we have to meet is Columbia River standards. And so that's quite a ways from Petersburg, and we have naturally occurring arsenic here in our water. And anyway, they got the Corps said, well, I don't know if that's our problem, not problem, but our issue to take up. And he said, maybe it's EPA. So in passing in the lobby, the entry room into the Congressman Young's office, we ran into Chris Laddick, who was formerly the manager of the Dutch Harbor, and he worked for the governor's office. Now he's in the EPA, the head of waters. So we kind of touched on the topic with him. So and when we met with the governor's office, we also talked about this. We think we need some standard here in the state that we can follow so it's more comparable, you know, apples to apples and not apples to oranges. So secure rural schools was another thing we touched on. Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan were fairly optimistic that this would be funded. Our lobbyists said everybody's looking through some rose-colored sunglasses. But when I talked with NACO, who's National Association of Counties, the last day, a gentleman in their office who's on the Hill every day said he's pretty optimistic that that will be funded. And with the conversation with our lobbyist, Brad Gilman, this morning, he said that it's probably going to be kicked back till late March before they even have that discussion. So hopefully that happens. It's a big thing for Petersburg. Infrastructure, we talked to the delegation about the infrastructure bill that they're talking about back in D.C., mentioned the access road and Scow Bay. So hopefully if that happens, we kind of gave them our opinion that it should be like the Tiger Grant program. There should be a percentage for rural communities. What the level of rural is, who knows? Tiger Grants, I believe, is 50,000 people or less, but they're saying 25% of this funding will be for rural communities. Transboundary waters issues. We met with Miriam Murray in the State Department. Gave her our concerns about the transboundary river issue and wondering why the International Joint Commission hasn't been convened. And so hopefully we'll get some input from her. But on Saturday, this last weekend, Senator Sullivan and Lieutenant Governor Mallott went to Ottawa to talk to the Canadian delegation. So hopefully we'll get some information from them as to what transpired on that meeting over the weekend. Sea otters was another discussion. The issue was raised with Senator Sullivan and Congressman Young. Both seemed willing to address the issue in some manner, but the discussion centered around liberalizing the Native Alaskan exemption to the Marine Mammal Protection Act that allows marine mammal pelts utilized in traditional Native handicrafts. So Senator Sullivan may float an MMPA reauthorization bill later this year. So it was a good trip, and then something that we didn't really plan on doing, but we got an opportunity, Liz and I did, to go to the Norwegian Embassy on Wednesday, and we met with a couple of the ambassador's colleagues. And I, my impression when we went there was it could be about a half an hour. We were almost 2 hours in the room, and it was quite interesting, just relations and learning how Norway operates. And then NACO, I mentioned earlier, last year we decided to cancel our membership with NACO. It's $450 a year. And one of the reasons that Steve and I have talked about that and we decided not to re-up it was the impression was that they wanted you to participate in the meetings, which meant travel, which would add extra expenses and a lot of time. And I got a call from Kim Hall. She found out I was back in Washington, D.C., and I met with Brian Maney last Wednesday. And I think there's a good bang for the buck, especially for $40 a month. You not only get one of their members is on the Hill every day, and they're a big proponent for secure rural schools and PILT. So that was, you know, interesting to talk with them. Besides that, if you're ever back in D.C., any of us are, they've got an office within walking distance of the Capitol. We could use their computers, their printers, office space, and they're willing to help. And if there's any, Steve has the contact information for these two gentlemen. And if anybody has any questions, they said they're, if we sign back up, they'd be happy to help us. Another thing that I didn't realize was available to everybody in the community, and it's countrywide. If you belong to NACO, you can get a prescription medicine card. You could go online, print it out, and this Brian even told me he had all kinds of stuff about Petersburg printed out when I went there Wednesday morning. It was kind of impressive. He wants to, or $450. But anybody in the public can qualify for up to 25% off on certain prescription medicines. And he said Rexall Drug is actually one of the pharmacies that allows that. So. Anyway, Liz, you have any extra input? I'm done rambling. I thought it was a very worthwhile trip. It's educational.
No, I just wanted to add that the one topic that you covered everything but PILT, and that we heard very favorably on PILT, that it probably will remain as it is, and there's a lot of support for that because it's so popular across the country that they're able to get a lot of constituencies supporting it. So that seemed to be one really positive note.
Yeah, it was a positive trip. And earlier, before the meeting, Member Strand asked me why they want to house two FRCs in each port. And their Coast Guard's position on that is it takes 19 shore-based people to man one of the ships. If they have two ships there, it only takes one extra person. Their shore-based support is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's highly unlikely we'll see one of those tied up in Petersburg, but hopefully there'll be some kind of a replacement. Anyway, let me check one thing, Steve, see if I've got anything else that I missed. I don't think so. So now it's time for the manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I held the last of the three community meetings to discuss ways in which the borough can decrease costs or increase revenue Saturday or two back. The final list of ideas and comments submitted from all three meetings and from email submissions were sent out to the Assembly earlier that week. Just a big thank you to the community members who came out and gave us their ideas. We'll be asking department heads going forward to schedule a time to give a status report on their specific areas over several assembly members. We'll spread it out to not have a big impact, but try to keep it no more than two departments per meeting. And I think it'll be helpful for the public to understand how things work within our individual departments. So we'll try to keep it high level, but also pertinent to folks in town and the kind of questions that we've received. We are finding it a little bit difficult to compete on both dispatcher and police officer positions. It is now becoming more commonplace for cities and boroughs in Alaska to offer hiring bonuses for certified police officers. We have not done that and are not intending to do it at the moment, but we're also starting to see starting wages increase. We're currently have an open position, and we're competing against Homer and Soldatna and not competing well, but we'll see how it goes. John and Kelly and the group are working through some candidates, and we'll see how it turns out. But it's something we're watching pretty close. We do have a currently scheduled meeting with PMEA for mediation. It is scheduled the 20th and 21st of February to see if this will help settle our new contract. At this time, the borough has not received an updated list of demands from the association. The last we received was dated June 29th, and nor has the borough gone beyond what the assembly approved prior to starting negotiations. So that's where we stand at the moment. The U.S. Corps of Engineers has been working on the outline and organization for the South Harbor Dredge project. I signed the project management plan week or so back, which documents the project and clarifies everyone's responsibilities. Currently, the team is developing their plan for obtaining initial bathymetric information of the South Harbor Basin and figuring out exact boring hole locations. We should hear back in early February when and how they will want to approach this. Work is on schedule for the power and light remodel. Currently, the contractor has completed all framing, interior insulation, electrical, and plumbing. Sheetrock has been hung and is in the process of being taped. Exterior vinyl siding is removed, and the vapor barrier is up. Insulation system and new siding and trim will be going up soon. The exterior stairs were completed recently as well. We're on track for the project being substantially complete by April 1st, with final completion by May 1st. And we had a bit of a wrinkle in the 350 generator. That's the generator to back up this building. It's in the process of having it installed. Borough staff noticed a cracked oil pan and loose coupling on some of the equipment. We've asked the vendor, Pacific Power, to replace the generator end of the unit and provide a new oil pan. This will keep the backup generator offline until such time we receive the replacement equipment and can schedule the vendor's technicians to come back to install everything and our engineer to provide final acceptance and commissioning of the unit. Keeping an eye on that. That's it, unless there's questions.
Any questions of the manager? Member Walter?
Was this generator new, Steve? Why do we need a new generator end? I'm assuming that's the part that generates the electricity. Yeah. So
the backup for power for this building, police, municipal building. What else does it back up? It's just that group? Scott? Carl? Power and light itself.
Go ahead. In this building.
That's what I thought.
So this wasn't a new generator then?
I think it was.
That's a replacement for an older one that we had. Let's see. The old generator was on the target list to get replaced, and we tried to do it in sync with this building. It was cheaper for us to do most of this as much as we could ourselves rather than making it part of this building project. But it's a replacement generator for what we had before that was basically old and worn out.
Kurt, if I get your question right, you're wondering why we had to replace the generator end and not the motor end?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
So it's obviously not new then.
Was it a brand new unit?
It's brand new, yeah.
So was the generator damaged?
Coupling between the generator and the motor, there was some slop in it, the way I understand it.
Oh.
And now they're replacing the whole alternator part of the generator.
Is that coupling out? Member Walter?
Follow up there. So is this under warranty then, or is that an added expense?
Warranty,
okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Sorry.
Any projected date when it'll all be up and running? Or?
No, we're still waiting for the form to get the gen set part, and they'll be getting back with us.
Thank you. Any other questions of the manager on his report? Member Mucci.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, Steve, are you looking for direction from us about the next step after these three community meetings?
Yes. Not today, but at some point, yes.
Okay.
What would you foresee being a good time frame? I mean, we have pretty busy meetings, it looks like, for the next couple of, anyway, with all these ordinances we're going to be going over.
It's entirely up to the assembly. I mean, honestly, I have a recommendation for next steps, which would be to, for the assembly to kind of look at them and you know, either give me direction you want done on all of them or prioritize four or five and we work through those. I've purposely avoided having staff go in and, you know, write up a paragraph or two on each idea. I didn't want it to appear that we were trying to, you know, slow an idea down or anything like that. I wanted the assembly to kind of make the call there. So we can do any number of things. We could have staff write them up, you know, and say, okay, this is possible, this is not, or here's pros and cons on each idea. I can organize them differently. The assembly can pick four or five at an open meeting and say, Steve, we want you to go look at these four or five. It's entirely up to.
Okay, Member Mucci.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, for me, it would be helpful if you or one of your staff collated all the suggestions we had based on the topic and maybe get that to us so we could kind of see if we've got this many suggestions for taxing the boats in the harbor, this many suggestions for reduced refuse pickup, these many ideas, and then kind of categorize them some way just so that...
Can do that.
Because I have all three of them, but it would be nice if they were just kind of... There was some kind of flow to them.
Everybody, sure, everybody should have received one that included all the ideas.
Yep,
I did send that out. But I like I said, I have not categorized them. You know, a good category mix in these would be, you know, revenue versus expense, and then expense organized by department. And, you know, by how many people made the same suggestion. Again, I didn't want to assume. And
so, did you have a comment?
Member? I did not.
Member Mucci, is that good?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
So, at a future meeting, do we need to give you direction, or?
I'll put that all together that way, unless I'm hearing objections.
No.
I mean, I can, that's easy to do, and I'll get that back out to the assembly, and then I'll just wait to hear from the assembly from there on next steps. What meeting do you want to have go over it, or you know, once you get this stuff in your hands?
Okay. Member Vucci?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, because I think it would be helpful to have all those different ideas and then let the assembly kind of chew on them to decide if we want to pursue them further or that idea doesn't make any sense or give us the opportunity to kind of push this thing along.
Yeah.
That's my
idea. Okay, we need to come up with some kind of a consensus out of the three meetings.
Sure.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'd like to back up to the mayor's report, not trying to make the meeting any longer, but if the assembly has no objection, it's well within Steve's spending authority to pay the $450 to rejoin NACO. Does that make sense to the assembly, or would you rather have it as a action item at a future meeting?
I have no problem with that, to speak for myself.
Okay, so I really think it's money well spent. With that being said, we will take a 5-minute break and come back at roughly 1:40-ish, 1:43.
That membership, does that include our...
Petersburg Borough Assembly Meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, helping clients find out how to protect any valuable asset, from stamp or teacup collections to houses and boats of all sizes, and everything in between. Plenty of information from the local agents is available. Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, 772-3858.
Time is 1:34. Beautiful afternoon here in Petersburg. It's warmed up to 27 degrees. Forecast calls for temperatures in the low 30s for the high temperature today. As for this evening, we've got a chance of snow late in the forecast. Lows tonight in the mid-20s with light winds. Snow and rain tomorrow with accumulation possibly another 2 inches of snow in the forecast for Tuesday. Highs in the mid-30s, lows in the mid-20s on Tuesday night with light winds. And warming temperatures by Wednesday, highs around 40 with rain showers and a chance of snow showers mixed in on Wednesday. And then back to our winter temperatures of highs in the low 30s and lows in the mid-20s Thursday into Sunday. But a spike of warmer weather on Wednesday this week. At the LIO right now, the House Finance Committee is taking public testimony on workers' comp. You can add your opinion down at the LIO this afternoon, or if you can't get there, you can do so online at akl.tv is when you can listen in. But if you do want to add public testimony, stop down to the Petersburg Legislative Information Office there at 11B Joa Street, right behind Petersburg Insurance. The phone number at the LIO is 772-3741. Also, Judiciary in the House, that committee is taking public testimony regarding crimes against medical professionals. That also started at 1:30. And House Labor and Commerce is taking public testimony regarding adopting Uniform Environmental Covenants Act and hearing a presentation on Alaska residential building codes. That's at 3:15 this afternoon. Happy birthday to Susan Holmes, Millie Dine, Kylie Neunecker, and Heather Bieber. Hope you have a good day today. A reminder that commercial fishing vessel safety exams are available here in Petersburg through Friday. Register at the Harbor Master's office at 772-4688. And while AMSI is here in town, they're offering a fishing vessel safety awareness and damage control workshop at the Tides Inn tomorrow, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is free to commercial fishermen. And you can stop by the Tides Inn this afternoon. They've got a session going on now. If you want to register, or you can register online at amsea.org. Petersburg Borough Assembly meeting, they're just in a break. It'll be resuming here in just a couple of minutes here on KFSK. We've got an interesting note passed along to us from Dave Berg. The International Space Station should be visible this evening if our clear skies continue. Look to the skies for the flyby at about 5:31 this evening. The space station will be moving southwest to southeast, visible for about 4 minutes. That's this evening about 5:30. Here on the radio tomorrow, earthquakes and tsunamis will be the topic of discussion on Talk of Alaska. That's airing here on KFSK tomorrow at 10 a.m. It'll be followed by the annual State of the Judiciary address delivered by the Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court at 11 a.m. KFSK will broadcast that address live. You're listening to KFSK Petersburg. Petersburg Borough Assembly is meeting right now in Assembly Chambers, and they're just in the midst of a brief break. We'll return to the meeting shortly.
Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, offering asset protection and security through insurance. Home, auto, boat, life. Information from a real live person who is in the same phone book as you. Petersburg Insurance at 772-3858.
Maybe we should get started again.
I'll put in a water stir when we get done.
Well, that's only guaranteed in life.
If the assembly members will take their positions, we can get started again.
Hey, Jay.
Actually, the air, cool air was blowing when I came in, so it wasn't even coming.
Why don't you show up to the second meeting?
I should have. Nice. Yeah.
A couple minutes early, but we're all sitting around just BSing.
I think I may be
that
way.
Okay, it's 1:39 p.m. on February 5th. We'll call the meeting back to order. We're on item 14 on the agenda. Ordinances for third and final reading. There's one ordinance, and it's ordinance 2018-03, This is an ordinance amending the official zoning map for service area 1 of the Petersburg Borough to rezone lot 10, block 234, and it's out by Point Frederick. It's going to be rezoned from open space recreational to single family residential. Entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its third and final reading.
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Morrell. Any discussion? The clerk call the roll.
Eric?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes. Okay. Ordinance 2018-03 passes in its third and final reading. And then there's a few ordinances for second reading today. Ordinance 2018-01. This is an ordinance amending Petersburg Municipal Code, Section 4.28.130, Senior Citizen Exemption to authorize collection of an application fee in order to cover the administrative costs of processing, issuing, and monitoring of senior citizen sales tax exemption cards. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its second reading.
So move.
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Castro, to adopt Ordinance 2018-01. Is there any discussion? Okay, I have a comment to make. This fee is a little bit more than what the finance director said it would actually cost to produce the card. I believe she came up with like a $50, maybe $60 value, and then was amended to make it $100 at the last meeting, and amendment passed, and so did the ordinance. So I'm going to be voting no on this. I feel it's a kind of like an extra tax. If you're charging a little bit more for something than it's actually costing you to provide. So is there another discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Jeff?
Yes.
Mark?
No.
Nancy?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Nope.
Jay?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Okay, Ordinance 2018-01 passes with a 5-2 vote with Member Wallhuter and myself, Mayor Jensen, opposed. Next item on the agenda is an Ordinance 2018-02. This is an ordinance adopting a new Petersburg Municipal Code, Chapter 4.80, to impose a marine passenger fee in order to address the cost incurred by the borough for services and infrastructure rendered to cruise ships and cruise ship passengers visiting the borough. All right, entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its second reading.
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Wallhuter. Any discussion? Member Castro.
You know, I was approached by members in the community who said that they would like to see the name of the fee being changed. And sometimes, I know it's just a name, but sometimes semantics makes a difference, and perhaps the industry would prefer infrastructure fee instead of a fee, a fee assessed for each of their passengers. So I wanted to pass that out there and see what other folks thought about just a simple name change.
Okay, would you if you make that in the form of a motion, we get a second, we can discuss it. You want to just change the language?
Yeah, may I just like to make a motion that we change the name from marine passenger fee to infrastructure fee.
Second.
Okay. Motion's been made to amend this by Member Castro, seconded by Member Mucci, to change this from impose a marine passenger fee to an infrastructure fee.
Mm-hmm.
Any discussion on the amendment? Member Stanton Greger.
Point of clarification with Member Castro, would you be changing any other wording, or are you speaking solely just to the name of it?
Solely just in the name of it.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on that? Member Mucci?
So does that tie our hands in what we can use this funds for, Mr. Mayor? Or is there any semantics with the word infrastructure fee that...
I don't know. Okay. I'm sorry.
That's right.
And if we do amend this, and we could reach out to the attorney if we... vote for the amendment and vote for the motion as amended, and we could ask here for the third reading if we have to change it. Member Castro?
Yeah, and I don't mean to hamstring us and to make our decisions or make this a less useful fee, but I just wanted to just follow up on that since folks had reached out to me directly.
Okay, one question for you, Member Castro. In the motion for the amendment, would we leave marine in there and put to impose a marine infrastructure fee?
Sure, yes.
Delete both of them. Yes. Member Mucci.
Yeah, through Steve, can I get a word with the finance director on some of her thoughts on if it's gonna, how it's all going to work?
Well, I think that if you called it marine infrastructure fee, you know, people would think, okay, this is just solely for the harbor. Whereas, what if you did something on Main Street that's not in the marine area? I think that would, you know, imply something that's not really our intentions. There's also in the use of proceeds in the last chapter of the ordinance, it does say that this money can be used for projects and programs that promote safety, environmental improvements, efficiency in interstate and international commerce, or enforcement of laws caused or required by marine passenger ships and marine passengers. I know Juneau uses a lot of their marine passenger fee money to beef up their police department in the summers when they get so many people, and use it for their fire department and their ambulance services and their hospital. So, you know, we need to be careful about the wording. I do agree that marine passenger fee is not probably the best title, but I'm not sure infrastructure is either. Mm-hmm. But I really don't like marine infrastructure fee.
You know, on second thought, you know, maybe, I don't know how to properly do this to reword the amendment, but maybe marine should be struck and it should just be to impose a infrastructure fee. Because I don't know if that's the right wording either then.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how he altered his amendment, was just by adding the word. So,
Mindy, how do you have the amendment worded?
Well, he just used infrastructure fee to begin with. There was discussion about adding marine, but
okay,
I don't have it down as part of the amendment.
Okay, I'm corrected then. So if we vote on the amendment, it'll just say we'll strike the word marine passenger and put infrastructure fee. Does that? Member Mucci?
Yeah, well, Mr. Mayor.
Do we want to amend the amendment?
Well, maybe, but I think it should be clear in what the ordinance is, that what it's about. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we put in infrastructure fee and don't identify that we are, for me, that we're getting this fee because of marine passengers visiting Petersburg, I don't want it to get lost that that's not the intent. I don't want infrastructure fee. It's kind of an all-encompassing word, and I want to make sure that the marine passenger fee is part of that. I mean, it could be a marine passenger infrastructure fee, but I don't want it to get lost. You know, somebody's going to say, what's the infrastructure fee? Mm-hmm. Whatever. I'm just
sorting out. I guess another option at this point, if we leave the ordinance amended like Member Castro wanted, and if it doesn't pass, then it's right back to where it was. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, any other discussion on the amendment? Clerk, call the roll.
Brandy.
Yes.
Eric.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Kurt.
No.
Nancy.
Yes.
Mark.
No.
Jeff.
No.
Okay, the amendment passes, so we will strike the word marine passenger and add infrastructure in its place. And now we're back to the main motion as amended. Member Stanton Greger.
Yeah, through Steve. Between now and the final reading, I'm assuming you guys are going to be running that language through the lawyer, make sure that's all going to fly or not.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can amend accordingly in the third reading if we're sideways on this thing.
Correct. And I have a feeling Sarah's not going to like the language change. But
Fair enough.
I just don't know.
Cool. Yeah, we accordingly.
I guess that's why we have three readings.
Thank you, Mr. Walter. Manager.
Just to clarify why I'm saying no is that I didn't like the wording on that. I'm still in favor of collecting the fee, but I'll probably be voting no on the main motion simply because of the wording.
Okay, any other discussion on the motion as amended?
Mr. Mayor?
Member Mitri.
So just for clarification on the last vote on the amendment, can you read me who voted for the affirmative and who voted for the negative?
Yes. Brandy, yes. Eric, yes. Jay, yes. Kurt, no. Nancy, yes. Mark, no. Jeff, no.
So is it four to?
4-3 it passes.
4-3.
Yeah. Okay, any other discussion on the motion, main motion as amended? Member Castro.
I had another recommendation from the public, and I don't know if I should need to make a motion here to be able to offer a discussion about it. But what their thought was that they'd like to see the fee based upon the length of the vessel as opposed to the number of passengers. And I had emailed Glow with it, and I was just curious to be able to get hear again, you know, your response and how that might be assessed with the harbor. I was just trying to think about a way to be able to make the administration of those fees already kind of in place. It seems like you already have a billing department that can, you know, that already assesses fees for slips. And I was just wondering to see if that could just be added on to the bill.
Mr. Mayor, I guess I've always maintained that I don't want any part of this, but from the Harbor Department standpoint, because we have a vehicle, we call it moorage, so to, you know, talk about charging the tourists some other way. But that being said, I don't guess I didn't understand. Are you talking about $2 per lineal foot per person aboard, per visitor? We have our vessels are like 165 to 285.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am not proposing a certain rate per foot. I had just kind of thrown out a number such as like $2 a linear foot. However, I've heard that people feel that it would benefit the borough if we were to assess it at that as opposed to per passenger.
So it would just be one flat $2, say, for the Seabird or Sea Lion, 165 foot.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be times $2 mm-hmm. rather than $5 a head. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes.
So it would be considerably less amount of money at I don't know that it would collect.
Without making a motion to amend that, particular part in the ordinance wording. You know, that's how we'd have to do it officially. But it seems to me like that would get confusing because the harbor already charges the ships, if I'm not mistaken, for coming and mooring in our harbor.
Yep.
And then now we're just going to add a marine passenger or a infrastructure fee to that. So it's kind of like apples and oranges in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I don't want to throw my hands into the meat grinder and... No, I can withdraw that statement. I just wanted to be able to let it be known that
okay. That
was something that the public was...
All right, so without that being an official motion with the second, and thanks for the input, but now we're back to the main motion as amended. Any other discussion on that? Member Merle?
No.
Did you wave your hand?
No,
oh,
I was
wiping your eyes. Okay. Sleepy too, huh? Okay, the clerk called a roll.
Jeff?
Yes.
Mark?
No.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Nope.
Jay?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes as amended with a 5-2 vote, I believe, with myself, Mayor Jensen, and Member Walhuter. Did you vote no as well, Kurt?
I did.
For the record? Okay.
Because of the language.
All right, thank you. So that brings us to the next item, which is 14D. Reorganization of the Electric Utility and Public Works Department. Excuse me. I'd entertain a motion to discuss the reorganization of the Electric Utility and Public Works Department.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, a motion been made by Member Stanton Greger, seconded by Member Merle. And the reason this is back on the agenda is because after we voted on it, the last meeting, the way the motion was made, it was to actually stop recruiting for a power light superintendent, the way it was stated, and vote to give the manager direction to hire two particular individuals. And it's not, by charter and by code, the assembly cannot direct the manager, and I'm not going to get all this right because I don't have the code in front of me, but to hire
any certain individuals, or fire or reprimand. So Steve talked to the attorney. The attorney came up with an opinion. You were all copied on my email to the manager about this, with his opinion and the borough attorney's opinion as well. They both interpreted it as it was kind of a confirming of the direction that was taken last May, and I thought it was more of a stopping that direction and redirecting the manager. So they, and in the conversation with the borough attorney, she was glad that we brought it back up and feels it should be brought back up. Did I get that right, Steve?
Yes, sir.
For care. Thank you. So that was just kind of explaining why we're talking about this again. Any other discussion? And if there, we have a, what was the motion? To reorganize the Electric Utility and Public Works Department?
Your motion was to discuss the reorganization.
Okay. That's how it's written here. Reorganize. Okay, we better go with what's written. There was a motion to approve this language. Okay, Member Stanton Greger.
So let me back up here just to clarify. So right now, is this an action item to direct the manager to do anything?
It's in action items.
So right now, the motion is to direct the borough manager to reorganize the Electrical, Utility, and Public Works Department.
Well, that's not the way the motion was made, but it's definitely something that we could change. Your motion was to discuss the reorganization. So maybe we need to reword that into something that we can be voted on.
I retract my motion.
Okay.
Then we would need a motion with the proper wording. Is there another motion? Member Stanton Greger.
Yes. I would move that we instruct the borough manager to continue with the reorganization of the Electrical and Utility Public Works Department. Does that work, Clerk Swihart?
Instruct the borough manager to what? I'm sorry.
To continue in the reorganization of the Electrical, Utility, and Public Works Department, somewhere along those lines.
Though. Okay, got it.
Is there a second to that motion? Was that my view, Member Strand?
Second.
Okay. Motion was made by Member Stan Greger, seconded by Member Strand, to instruct the manager to move forward with the reorganization of the Electric, Utility, and Public Works Department.
Correct.
Is that, do we have it right now?
Okay. I think we've got it now.
I feel good about that.
Okay. Member Stan Greger.
I mentioned this on Friday, and I'll bring it up again. My intention was never to micromanage the borough manager and tell him specifically to who to hire, although that was my wording. It was a validation of your May of 2017 plan. Just wanted to clarify for you, Mr. Manager, and the public.
Any other discussion? Member Mucci.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to clarify here, this ordinance or whatever we're voting on right now has nothing to do with the two other ordinance that we'll be talking about later on this afternoon.
Okay. This is, I think, Member Mucci, just to use the right procedure to ask the manager to move forward with the reorganization of power of the Electric, Utility, and Public Works Department. And then the ordinances are separate because they have to be changed to make this reorganization fit.
Sure. Thank you.
I think I'm on the right page.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other discussion?
Still more clarification. Will we be voting then on Ordinance 2018-05 after this, or is this ordinance will have to go on the next agenda?
Which ordinance? What's the word?
2018-05, the reorganization.
Yes, because that just changes the wording, I believe, in job descriptions, if I'm not wrong, and what the electric utility, what the manager of that utility would do. Is Member Giesbrick?
Through the mayor. Giesbrick? Through the mayor. Yes, sir. What you're preparing to vote on basically says move forward with the process of the reorganization. I actually can't do much else until all of these ordinances that are on your plate are approved the third time. Because in these ordinances, it specifies things like the public works director will be responsible for, and it lists the departments. The electric superintendent will be responsible for, and it lists you know, that department. I don't have any authority over changing ordinances. So the assembly, if you want to move forward with your reorganization, you have to vote that way on this item, but also all of those ordinances have to be approved with three readings. And once all of that's done, then I can actually go forward.
Does that include, it's still not clear to me, does that include approving what is the first reading of Ordinance 2018-05, which is to amend the title to electric utility, yada, yada?
I think each ordinance is going to have to be addressed individually to make this reorganization. If we vote yes on this, item 18059, it'll give the manager permission to move forward with his reorganization plans that he came up with last May, if I'm not mistaken. But he can't actually enact that until these five ordinances are passed, because, you know, job descriptions and job titles. So, Member Stan Greger?
Just a point of clarification. Yes, that's correct. Yeah, you got it exactly right.
And I understand that.
Can you please be recognized? Thank you, Member Strand.
I understand that. I just wonder if we're voting on if this motion we have is the same as approving the ordinance we have here, 2018-04.
I think this is a blanket direction over all five ordinances that we're going to change for the manager to move forward with that if the ordinances are approved in three readings. That's the way I understand it. Okay. Is that clearer? I know it's going to be a...
I think probably it's as clear as it's going to get.
Through the mayor, if I may.
Yes. Mark,
just to, I don't know if this helps. In some sense, I believe the attorney would want one of this, almost this exact wording, at the very end of the process.
Right.
Okay. And that was her preference in some ways. But because the motion that was made at the last meeting included names, I think the decision was, let's go ahead and have you guys vote on that now. My intention, unless something changes, if all of these ordinances, if this passes, all of these ordinances pass on that third meeting, you're going to see another line item that looks very similar to what you have right here, which is saying, Steve, proceed. I'm making it simple. But in other words, this is probably out of order in some sense, but it's fixing what happened before.
I think it's just to clarify the way the action was taken at the last meeting. And I have one more question on, maybe I should wait until we get to one of the ordinances, but if this all passes and goes through, are these jobs going to be advertised in any way? Internally, or, I guess that would be against the organization plan, so that kind of answered my own question.
It's correct, yeah. So if the assembly wants the jobs to be advertised and go in that direction, then that I'll need further direction from the assembly. I mean, the current plan was to appoint the people that we talked about. In a sense, I guess that's what you're voting on right now. And like I said, I would probably ask you to vote on again after all of the ordinances are read to say, okay, move forward. If you want to change that process where I'm not putting Carl and Chris in those positions, then I'll need direction from the assembly.
Member Mucci.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. I don't think we're voting on putting those people in those positions. I think we're voting on clarifying the motion that was made earlier so we get past that so we can get into the other five or six separate ordinances to actually change the job descriptions for those. We're not actually voting on a person. We're just voting on the wording of that original resolution or whatever we're going to call it. That's my understanding of it.
Fair enough.
And like the manager said, he can't move forward until we pass the ordinances. So this is basically just clarifying what we did at the last meeting. Member Strand.
And this is where I'm confused. We keep talking about five ordinances that need to be approved before they can be done, and we're looking at six.
Yes.
Well, maybe there is six. I lost track. I mean, originally when we visited this the first time in May, when it got put on the agenda as an action item or as a discussion item, not an action item, I wasn't of any knowledge that we had to change any ordinances. And then it came up that the attorney said we had to change three, and now it's six. So
the whole thing wasn't, you know, totally, you know, to this point. Now we know what we have to do to make it happen, so without causing any turmoil. So anyway, any other discussion on this? Member Waller.
I just got one question. Steve, if this is going to have to come up at the very end of this, assuming it gets passed, does that go through three readings?
No.
Okay. Just one.
That would be me basically. I'm assuming everything passes, which is a bad assumption. Assume it does. I would put up an agenda item, or I'd ask the assembly to consider an agenda item that says, you know, authorizing, you know, my, or the right word for it is approving my appointment of the individuals to these positions that I've chosen. At that point in time, the assembly can say, no, we want you to do something different. So it'd be something along those lines. You know,
is that clear? Yeah, thanks. Okay, so I guess we're just, we'll address this again at the end of the ordinance readings, and this just to kind of clarify what we did at the last meeting. So, will the clerk call the roll?
Jay.
Yes.
Kurt.
No.
Mark.
No.
Eric.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
Brandy.
Nope.
Nancy.
Yes.
Okay, the reorganization of electric and utility and public works department, the direction given to the manager to proceed with that when we're done with the going through the six ordinances, passes 4-3 with members Walhuter, Morrell, and myself, Mayor Jensen, opposed. Okay, so new business. This is the first of the ordinances. No, it isn't. This is a different one. An ordinance 2018-04. This is an ordinance amending Chapter 3.08 of the Municipal Code entitled Assembly and Mayor. Excuse me. To add agenda formation language and to amend the deadline for submission of items to be included on the agenda. I'd entertain a motion to adopt Ordinance 2018-04.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Stanton Greger, seconded by Member Morrell. And what this does is, back right after the last election in October, the Assembly requested language be added to this ordinance outlining who is allowed to place items on a meeting agenda. Clerk Thompson polled other Alaska clerks regarding their process and created the attached spreadsheet from the responses. New language is inserted in Section 3.08.120 for Assembly approval. I've got some input on this, but any other discussion by Assembly members? Member Stanton Greger.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't know. I may end up moving to amend this. I don't like part of the wording. Does the mayor or any two Assembly members or the manager may place reports, ordinances, et cetera? I think I'm of the belief that any one of us seven should have the right to bring something up on the agenda, either as a discussion item or an action item. Then it's up to the seven of us to decide as a whole whether that idea has merit. And if, in fact, an Assembly member brings up things that no one has interest in, well, then that's what we learn pretty quick. I think one is probably fine. I think that gives us all a reasonable power to bring up what we feel is important. Really just kind of like to hear from the rest of the Assembly before I pitch any amendments or anything.
Member Strand?
I'm inclined to agree, but I want to make sure that how many people will it take to amend the agenda at the beginning of the meeting?
Four.
To amend the agenda? If we're sitting in meeting and we got to the on the agenda where there's a the choice to amend?
Mm-hmm. I believe, if I'm right, under Robert's Rules of Order.
We'll vote on that, okay.
It's a motion to amend the agenda and give the language in the discussion, and it's a majority vote. I think if you want to change it later in the meeting, it takes a bigger margin, and without having the spreadsheet in front of me, I don't know. So is that clear? Member Walhuter.
Yeah, just to follow up on what Jay was saying there, you know, if you do put something on the agenda and the person who put it on the agenda, it makes the motion and there isn't a second, well, then it dies right there too. So I don't know if we want to, would it be considered polling if we had two of us, you know, that had to come up with that? I mean, that's one of the other questions I had in my mind. We'd have to try to convince somebody that our idea was right.
You'd have to
ask. Kind of know how they're voting.
You'd have to ask the attorney.
Maybe one person.
Member Stanton Greger.
Thank you. I guess I would amend the language that the mayor and any assembly member or the manager, just more or less saying make it one in the rest of the wording, Mindy.
Mayor or?
The mayor, any assembly member, or the manager.
Okay.
In the same language throughout.
So, I'll second that.
Okay, a motion has been made by Member Stanton Greger and seconded by Member Wallhooter to amend this Section A under this new item here. The mayor, any assembly member, or the manager may replace reports, ordinances, resolutions, contracts, documents, or other matters on the assembly meeting agenda. Any discussion on that amendment? If there's no discussion, when clerk call a roll on the amendment.
Jay?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Mark?
No.
Eric?
Yes.
Jeff?
No.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, it passes with 5-2 with Member Mucci and Mayor Jensen opposing. So now we're back to the main motion as agended. One thing I would like to bring up, and it has to do with the spreadsheet that our borough clerk put together. Mm-hmm. I love this one. It's sideways on the screen. You can't read it. Anyway, Clerk Thompson and I had this discussion about this, whenever, it was November-ish. And so I asked her to, look at it. We decided, I'll look into it and see what other communities do. What I would like to see before we move forward, maybe we could get this before the second reading. I mean, I'll probably vote in favor like it is, but on here it says Wrangell, for instance. The manager sets the agenda. That might be how it takes place, but I've got a copy of their ordinance, and I can share it with you. I have the clerk type it off for you, but assembly agenda, this is how it's written, 3.05.030 in Wrangell's ordinance. The agenda shall be prepared by the clerk, subject to review and revision by the manager and the mayor. An agenda shall be prepared before every regular meeting of the assembly, and the agenda shall be posted at City Hall by noon to give a date. And then here somewhere it also talks about two assembly members can put something on the agenda. So, I mean, I don't know if we want to delve into that and look at every ordinance to see how other people do it. I mean, there's some ideas. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Through the mayor. We actually have, through the mayor.
Go ahead, yeah.
We actually have all the ordinances. Debbie printed them.
Oh.
I did not have Mindy run copies because I didn't know if you wanted them today or not. But if you want them right now, she can go run copies for everybody.
Member Stanton Greger?
Yes. My only point with amending that was in the event there's a strong, a unique minority, then that minority member still has a voice. I just don't want to eliminate that from the process. That was my intention.
Okay, Member Mucci.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
So currently, how are we doing? How is it working right now?
I'd have to read the charter and the code again, but the way it, what I think happened in the past, the mayor set the agenda, but then I think that's the way the former borough clerk trained or current borough clerk or didn't, that's the process they used. And I've never, I'd go in and talk to Debbie, but I didn't set the agenda. The clerk prepared the agenda. And I go, and people could add stuff to it. And then you could still add to it, even after it's presented to the assembly, when under the section in the meeting where you could make a motion to amend the agenda. So, it was my bad back in May to maybe put that on this hot topic that we're discussing every meeting on just as a discussion item, not an action item. And that's where this came from in my feeling. So we just need to decide, right after the election in October, first meeting in November, I think we need to set policies and follow them so there's no, gray area back and forth. Member Mucci?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So currently, how is it being done?
Any one of you, the clerk or myself, can put something on the agenda. That's currently how it, but I'm not saying that's how it's written. I'm saying that's how it's being done. And the attorney recommended that we tighten this language up. We spell it out one way or the other.
Yeah.
Member Mucci, you have another comment?
Nope, that's good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I remember in one of the early meetings, it was, I think, it was a discussion item and how we're going to, who can put stuff on the agenda. And that's what we came up with, was basically anybody on the assembly and the manager, so, and the clerk. So with that being said, is there any other discussion on this ordinance 2018-04 and as amended? Did we vote on the amendment?
Mm-hmm. We did.
We did.
Vote
okay.
on the amendment.
Just want to clarify that so we're not backtracking and going over stuff again next meeting. Clerk, call the roll.
Nancy.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
Eric.
Yes.
Mark.
No.
Brandy.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes. Okay, it passes 6-1 with Mayor Jensen opposed. Okay, now, where are we? Ordinance 2018-05. Now we're starting with the amendment, or with the motions that will be part of the restructuring process. This is an ordinance amending Chapter 14.16 of the Municipal Code entitled Electricity to amend the title to Electric Utility to provide for the Utility Director as head of the Electric Utility Department and to establish fines for violations of provisions of Chapter 14.16. Entertain a motion to adopt this in its first reading.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Member Stanton Greger, seconded by Member Mucci. Discussion? Member Stanton Greger.
A question for the manager, if I may.
Yeah, you sure can.
Just to be clear for us and those listening at home, in order for you to proceed with your restructuring plan, you need this approved, yes?
Correct. Actually, all of them approved in a third reading. So,
thank you.
Member Mucci.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So on page 67 of our packet, under 14.16.100.
And this is in the proposed ordinance?
Yeah, it's...
I don't have...
Or it's with the,
what page is that, member?
It says 67.
Oh. What section is it again, please?
14.16.100.
Electrical inspector?
Yep. So my question is, how will the utility director become the electrical inspector of the borough?
Actually, through the mayor, I'm sorry. We tried to make the language kind of vague. You'll see where it says utility director or the director's duly appointed representative.
Okay.
This is similar in the, you know, Joe Nelson was our inspector as needed with the electrician responsible for doing electrical inspections that Joe Bertagnoli can't do. So, for example, Joe does household, you know, small stuff. Stuff gets a little bit more commercial related. We'd ask the electrician to do that. And when the electrician was on vacation, we would ask, Joe would go over and take a look at it. It didn't happen very often, but it did occur. So we wanted to make sure we left language in there that was flexible enough that the utility director could choose to have Joe Beagle look at it, could, you know, do it himself if he was qualified, could have the electrician do it, or for that matter, have one of the line crew do it. In some cases, the line crew have looked at service entries and things like that. So it's, again, designed to be flexible so that we can continue to service the citizens.
Any other discussion? Let me get back to the main page here. Bear with me.
No problem.
Okay, I don't have any other comments. Clerk, call the roll.
Brandy?
No.
Mark?
No.
Jay?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Kurt?
Nope.
Okay, ordinance 2018-05 passes with a 4-3 vote with members Walhuter, Marole, and Mayor Jensen opposed. That brings us to the next item on the agenda. This is ordinance 2018-06, an ordinance
amending Chapter 14.04 of the Municipal Code entitled Water to amend the title of Water Utility to provide for a utility director as head of the Water Utility Department and to establish fines for violations of provisions of Chapter 14.04. I'd entertain a motion to approve this in its first reading.
So move.
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Stanton-Greger to approve Ordinance 2018-06 in its first reading. Discussion? Member Stanton-Greger?
Again, just to be a bit redundant and to briefly clarify with the manager, this one is also consistent and needed in three readings for you to move forward with your reorganization plan.
Through the mayor, yes.
Thank you, sir.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Jeff?
Yes.
Mark?
No.
Nancy?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Kurt?
Nope.
Jay?
Yes.
Brandy?
No.
Okay, that ordinance passes with a 4-3 vote with members Walhuter, Morrell, and Jensen opposed. Okay, Ordinance 2018-07, an ordinance amending Chapter 14.08 of the Municipal Code entitled Sewer to amend the title to Sewer Utility to provide for a utility director as head of the Sewer Utility Department and to establish fines for violations of provisions of Chapter 14.08. I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution or Ordinance 2018-07 in its first reading.
So move.
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Stanton-Greger to adopt 2018-07 in its first reading. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Eric?
Yes.
Kurt?
Nope.
Jeff?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Brandy?
No.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
No. Ordinance 2018-07 passes with a 4-3 vote with members Walhuter, Morrell, and Jensen opposed. Have to write them down to keep track. There's so many of them. Ordinance 2018-08, an ordinance providing for Chapter 3.76 of Municipal Code entitled Administrative Officers and Appeals Process, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. This is not part one of the ordinances that... if I'm not mistaken, to do the restructuring. So I entertain a motion to approve 2018-08.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Stanton-Greger. Was that you?
Yes.
Member Mucci that made the second? Okay. Discussion on 2000. This ordinance, it appeals process, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. Member Stanton-Greger?
Just to clarify with the clerk, this is just a cleanup language, as it says, from city to borough code. Is this correct?
Yes, but if bear with me just a minute. I believe there was one line in here that had to do with the reorg. I don't want to...
Mr. Mayor,
I'm correct.
3.76020B?
Correct. So it does have to do with, it's in there, and they list the long administrative offices. In the former version, or the current version, says electric utility superintendent. So this is another one of those that had to be changed to utility director.
Thank you, sir.
Yes,
sir.
There was a comment. Member Walhuter, Member Mucci, did you? No.
I'm going to withdraw.
I'm just reading through it again. I looked at it, but it just... Okay, is there any more discussion on Ordinance 2018-08? Clerk, call the roll.
Jeff?
Yes.
Mark?
No.
Nancy?
Yes.
Brandy?
No.
Kurt?
Nope.
Jay?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Ordinance 2018-08 passes with a 4-3 vote with member, I'm going to do it backwards this time, Mayor Jensen, Member Morrell, and Member Walhuter opposing. Ordinance 2018-09, an ordinance amending Chapter 3.38 of the Municipal Code entitled Public Works Department to remove operations responsibility for the water utility and sewer utility from Public Works Director duties. Entertain a motion to approve Ordinance 2018-09 in its first reading.
So move.
Second.
Motion been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Stanton Gregor. Any discussion? Member Mucci.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I know we talked about this last Friday, and we talked about who was reporting to who, whether the utilities report to the electric. Does the water utility director, or whatever we're calling him, is that the person that's in charge of disciplinary procedures when a certain, if something inappropriate goes on, let's say at the water department, just for an example, will that person be in charge of disciplinary procedures, or does that fall under the purview of the utility director?
Okay. It falls under the purview of the utility director with input from the supervisor. So in this case, I mean, you're using water as an example. You know, the water supervisor would go to the utility director, or like today they would go to the public works director and say, I've got an issue with an employee. This is what happened, and I think I should write him up for it. And then the public works director, or in the reorg, the utility director would say, okay, let's walk through the steps, make sure that and everything's kosher. And often would involve also talking to borough clerk or the deputy clerk to double check. We have a process that we have to follow that's written up in our employee handbook, and there's also there's additional guidance in the collective bargaining agreement that talks about, you know, how we handle those kind of things. So we tend to take the path of most review is best, meaning it's best for the department head to be involved in those kind of decisions, at least to see it, make sure that we're dotting I's and crossing T's, and we're following all of the process as well. So,
Member Mucci?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So that person who is in charge of the water utility, I don't mean to pick on the water utility, mm-hmm. but is that person called a director, or what are we calling that person?
No. Currently they're supervisors?
Operations supervisors.
Operations supervisors.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
Any other discussion on Ordinance 2018-09? Clerk, call the roll.
Brandy?
No.
Eric?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Nope.
Nancy?
Yes.
Mark?
No.
Jeff?
Yes.
Ordinance 2018-09 with a 4-3 vote with members Walhuter, Merle, and Jensen opposed. Okay, next on the agenda is Ordinance 2018-10, an ordinance amending Chapter 3.40 of the Municipal Code entitled Electric Utility to amend the title to Electric Utility, Water Utility, and Sewer Utility Departments, and to provide for the three utilities to be the operation responsibility of the utility director. Entertain a motion to approve Ordinance 2018-10.
So move.
Second.
Discussion. Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Nope.
Mark?
No.
Eric?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Brandy?
No.
Nancy.
Yes.
Ordinance 2018-10 passes with a 4-3 vote with members Walhuter, Merle, and Jensen opposed. Next item is Resolution 2018-03, and this is a resolution authorizing and directing the Municipal Land Selection Agent to transmit to the Alaska Department of Natural Resources the borough's nomination of municipal entitlement lands. I'd entertain a motion to approve Resolution 2018-03.
So moved.
Second.
Motion been made by Member Castro, seconded by Member Walhuter. Liz, do you have any comment? I think this is a good idea. What it is, I'm sure we all, maybe for the listening public, but I think we all understand that this is a resolution to just approve the selections from the Land Selections Committee, which has been busy working for quite some time now. I can't remember, but since borough formation. And I think what they did in PEDC Director, Economic Development Director Liz Cabrera suggested that, well, just pick the land that isn't suitable, because the land we wanted to pick was, you know, was so much. And anyway, there's a map here that shows the selection. people want to look at the map, you can get it on the borough website, I would imagine, or just all you'd have to do is go to today's agenda and go to this item. But the committee determined the borough's new entitlement following passage of Senate Bill 2018, 14,666 acres. And what we had previously received from the city as the city of Petersburg, you minus that 457 acres-ish, and that gives us 14,208 acres. So to choose, if I'm not mistaken. Do you have any clarification on anything, Liz?
Nope. I can answer any questions if anyone has any, but I think you've
okay,
got it.
Okay, so this will be a long process. We have to go through DNR and request the land, and hopefully it won't all have to be surveyed because of former surveys done on the land by Forest Service, et cetera. Any other discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Nancy?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Resolution 2018-03 passes unanimously. That brings us to Resolution 2018-04, a resolution in support of full funding, $9,820,141 for the State of Alaska Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Program in fiscal year 2019, capital budget. And entertain a motion to approve this resolution.
So move.
Second.
Motion been made by Member Walhooter, seconded by Member Morrell. To adopt this resolution 2018-04. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Kurt?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Okay, next resolution, 2018-05, a resolution authorizing loan applications to the Alaska Clean Water Fund to assist in funding improvements to the wastewater collection system. I'd entertain a motion to adopt resolution 2018-05.
So move.
Second.
Motion been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Stanton Greger. Just for the people listening in the public, Carl, can you give a brief overview of this, or Jody, whoever, Chris, whoever would be the most appropriate?
Yeah, I can read the memorandum if you like, which gives the details, or we can do the 30,000-foot level if you want. These are, you know, we've got a list of projects on our capital improvement plan for the, you know, the various utilities. These are two wastewater projects that have been on, you know, on the plan for a while. We have applied periodically for funding to DEC, to make these projects happen. In the past, we've been successful getting a lot of grant funding for these type of projects. You know, the grant funding's pretty much gone away, so what we're left with is loan funding availability, which is still good. The loan terms are pretty good. It's a 20-year financing at 1.5%. So it's, you know, a reasonable cost for the money they loan. The two projects in particular, one is the Pump Station 4 Force Main Replacement Project. That's for roughly 1,000 feet of force main that starts at the Hungry Point pump station and goes to the next manhole in line, eventually goes to pump station 5, which is the terminal pump station in the system. But a lot of that line between pump stations 4 and 5 is in good shape. It's the first 1,000 feet or so that is a force main. It's a ductile iron, and it's exposed to salt water, basically. And it has failed there right at Hungry Point. You probably remember a few years ago we had a big repair project out below the tide line to, you know, dig down and put some repair pipe in. And, you know, we think the rest of the line is probably in similar condition because it's been exposed to the salt water. And so this $360,000 is an estimate on what it will take to either rehab or replace that line. And so some engineering will be necessary to determine what is the most cost-effective repair scenario for that 1,000-foot section of forest main. The other project that's on this list is the Scow Bay 1 pump station upgrade. Back in 2014, we approached the assembly. We had DEC funding availability in the amount of $400,000. The assembly actually approved making that loan application. Because we weren't shovel ready at the time, DEC recommended that we just do a design loan, which is what we did. So we've only got $70,000 on the books right now out of $400,000 that was approved. During the design process, we discovered that, you know, we had some challenges with that site. We don't really have any property at that pump station. That is basically it's to give you a little point of reference, it's between Beulah Lure's property and Chris McFadden's property right there, just past Libby Straits going south. The borough doesn't have any property where the pump station is located, and that's one of our big challenges for this project. We determined that the $400,000 budget probably wasn't sufficient just because we weren't, you know, we did go through a process of seeing whether those property owners would be willing to either donate or sell a piece of property to the borough so that we could have some room to expand this pump station site, and we weren't successful with that, so we had to drop back and basically increase our project costs to allow for working pretty much in the road section. We're right on the shoulder there, so anything we do with that pump station is going to have to be you know, working right next to the highway, and the costs go up when you have that kind of situation where you're trying to protect the highway, protect the workers, and so forth. So we went back to DEC, asked for a little bit more funding for that project. They've approved of that. And so what the assembly would be doing in this case, if you approve this, this money isn't, it's not approving the whole $550,000. It's basically the extra $150,000 over what we originally thought the project would cost, because $400,000 has already been approved and is done. So it's, so I think the resolution said $910,000 was the total, and that's true, but $400,000 of that was already approved in 2014. Does that answer everybody's questions on these two projects?
Does anybody have any other questions? Member Walter.
Just for a point of clarification, so you're still asking for a total of $910,000, or are we talking $550,000?
$910,000 is the... And I believe that's what the resolution says. That's the mm-hmm. that's the total value of the two projects together.
Okay.
But we've already, for the Scow Bay project, we already got assembly approval for $400,000 previously. So really, this is approving an extra $510,000.
Okay. Just maybe a point of clarification, Chris.
Yeah.
And maybe I understood you wrong, but did you say out of the first $400,000 that was approved, we've got $70,000 left, or did I?
No, we. It was a conversation we had with DEC because it wasn't a shovel-ready project. They requested that we only take out a smaller loan at the time just for design funding instead of construction funding as well. So out of the $400,000 that was approved, we actually have applied for and received a $70,000 loan to fund the design process. And, you know, we'll, once we get a little further along, you know, we'll apply for the rest of it for construction and so forth. But right now, we're just operating on a design loan.
Okay, so is the design move forward, or are you waiting for authorization to get all the money for the project?
We've gotten to a certain point in the basically the pre-design process where we have a strategy now, but we don't want to launch on a full design until we know whether we have adequate funding to construct that design. Otherwise, we're spending money on design that maybe isn't money well spent because we don't have enough to build it later.
All right. And is this one of the projects? I believe Member Morrell asked for a breakdown of
how many grants we had out and when they're
when they
expired. And this is going to leave us some money left to apply for grants, but we still have quite a bit of money on the table.
Yes, there's
probably need these projects done. I'm just for clarification for the people listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, out of the original, there was a $15 million approval process that, you know, back in 96, am I right? And so there's $15 million total borrowing capacity that was approved by the voters at this point, including these loans. I think we're right around 10, so there's still $5 million worth of room to loan out future projects.
In case people were listening, they'd know there's hopefully we don't need to replace any more big projects, but I'm sure that's a pipe dream, so to speak. Any other discussion on Resolution 2018-05? Clerk, call the roll.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes. Eric? Oh, you said yes? I turned that hearing aid up. All right, that Resolution 2018-05 passes unanimously. Next item on the agenda is item K, which is 18-072, North Harbor Approach Dock Replacement Project. Manager Giesbrick and Harbor Master Wolin request approval to enter into a professional services contract with Harai and Associates Incorporated for engineering services, contract administration, to get it ready to put out to bid, and inspection of the project for an amount not to exceed $14,375. This project does not include miscellaneous costs associated with the bidding process. I'd entertain a motion to approve this.
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion been made by Member Walhooter, seconded by Member Strand, to approve this North Harbor Approach Dock Replacement Project. Any discussion? I see Harbor Master Wolin recommends this, and this was the old approach to the North Harbor that currently isn't used anymore. Glow, could you, maybe it's in here, I might have overlooked. What's the intention for this? I mean, it'd be nice to have that square footage for replacement, but could this be in any way used to expand the workshop or anything like that, or what's the, just for parking for the plow truck and oil dumpsters, et cetera?
Well, we're just talking the dock replacement now. So, yeah, I mean, it could be, I suppose, in the future used for, you know, if we wanted to expand the building or we wanted to build a shop out on it or something like that. But it's just the dock itself. Okay. It's the piling and the surface.
The scope of the project. All right. Any other discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Nancy?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes. Okay. That passes with a 7-0 vote. Next item on the agenda, appointment of Mark W. Tosillo to the Public Safety Advisory Board. I would entertain a motion to appoint Mr. Tosillo to the Public Safety Advisory Board.
So moved.
Second.
Motion been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Merle, to appoint Mark Tosillo to the Public Safety Advisory Board. Any discussion? Member Stanton Greger.
I just wanted to thank Dr. Tosillo for putting his name in and being of service to the Public Safety Advisory Board. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, for putting your name in. Next item is M18-074, dissolution of the
land. Vote on that?
What's that?
We need to vote on it.
Yes, I guess we need to vote. That's the new process, isn't it? Clerk, call the roll. We'll get a roll call vote.
Okay. Mark?
Yes.
Jay?
Thanks, Jay.
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Okay. 7-0 vote to approve Mr. Tosillo to the Public Safety Advisory Board. Next item on the agenda is dissolution of the Land Selection Ad Hoc Committee. The Land Selection Committee, formed in February of 2013, has completed its task of selecting and nominating municipal entitlement lands within the Petersburg Borough. The committee will be dissolved, and that is with their request, and that needs to be voted by the Assembly. So I'd entertain a motion to disband the Land Selection Committee.
So move.
Second.
Motion been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Castro, to disband the Land Selection Committee.
Clerk, call the roll.
Mark?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Okay, that passes unanimously, and I'd like to offer them a thanks for their time in selecting the land, and it's very important to the borough. Oh, next item, 18.075. We're looking for direction for recruitment process for the police chief and, excuse me, and deputy clerk. Manager Giesbrick and Clerk Thompson request guidance on the recruitment process for a new police chief and deputy clerk. Shall we follow charter and code and handle the recruitment ourselves, or does the assembly wish to have an active role in the recruitment as they have with the electrical superintendent position? Entertain a motion to approve their process they propose, or to come up with a direction.
Do we need a motion to, or can we just comment now?
Well, this is actually, they're asking for a direction, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So I think if we're going to do that, we should make a motion. Yes. Mm-hmm. So
move. What's the motion? I'll track that.
Member Spratt.
Think about this for a second.
Aren't we required to follow charter and code?
May I?
Can you explain?
Sure. No. The assembly can be in the middle of this or not. I mean, it's the way, and maybe it's a liberal reading on my part. My job is to recruit, hire, and handle that process. But the assembly has to, it's clear in our charter and ordinances, the assembly has the right to say yay or, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down on anybody that I hire, which is what we've dealt with on the electrical superintendent thing. So what I'm asking is, you know, I don't want to go into this. If the assembly is anticipating having a much more active role in either of these two positions, then we'll do like we did on the electric superintendent, where I'm engaging the assembly. You're part of the hiring committee is what it amounts to. Interviewing, that whole process, so that I get buy-in from all of you as we go through the process, rather than getting to the end and going, hey, wait a minute. We want to do something different. Past department heads, the assembly has not really weighed in much. And, you know, I just bring them to the assembly at the end and say, this is our new police chief. Do you agree? And everybody would say, sure. I just want to make sure. I mean, it's entirely up to the assembly on how you want to approach this, because you have the final say on a thumbs up or thumbs down.
Member Stanton Greger?
Can I ask a question of the manager real quick?
Yeah, because I've got one for him. Maybe you have the same question. Go ahead.
Fair enough. So in the previous hiring for Chief Swihart and Clerk Swihart, what was the process for that?
Okay. The police chief is different because we used a consultant, and I'm not planning on doing that this time. So I got permission from the assembly to use an outside consultant, and then after that it was pretty much all on me. We did the whole screening process. We brought people to town. I interviewed them all. We had a board interview with some folks.
Yep.
Got into this room here, and the group decided who they wanted me to extend an offer to. I extended the offer. Kelly wonderfully accepted. And I think it was the next assembly meeting I came to the assembly and said, you know, I'd like you to approve my hiring of Kelly Swihart at this salary price. So that's how that happened.
Roger.
Assemblies members were not involved in the interview process, or really, I think some of the assembly came to the social event we had where we met and mingled with the candidates.
Informally participated.
Correct.
If I'm hearing you correctly. Thank you.
Very informal.
My question's perfectly.
The clerk was a different thing. We didn't use a consultant or a very elaborate process. We posted the job internally and externally. And went with Debbie as the kind of heir apparent.
Sure.
You know, in fact, I'm not even sure we did post that one. We posted Mindy's job, but I don't think we posted the clerk's job.
That answers it more than adequately. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Member Vici?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I have no intention of sitting in on the hiring process of anybody working for the city, but I brought up a couple of weeks ago that I think it's important to maybe this would be a good example for what the public safety advisory could help the city manager with. If that would be a useful tool.
Think it would be.
You know, that the city clerk's position, or the not the city clerk, but the deputy city clerk, I'm going to leave that up to Steve. I don't want to be involved in it. I might sit in on an interview when we get down to a final few candidates, but that's not my expertise, so I'm not.
Any other comments? I was involved in that process to some extent because Firstman, was that the name of the group we hired? I was actually interviewed by them.
Correct.
And so there was some counsel at the time involvement.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what level. I mean, that was 5 years ago.
What we did there is when we – oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, man.
Go ahead.
Part of their the advantage of using a consultant like that was they actually interviewed about 30 people here in town, names that I gave them, to, you know, what do you want in a police chief? I mean, again, the police chief is one of those positions that – we wanted to make sure that whoever we hired fit the community really well. We also, you know, we knew we were hiring somebody that was replacing, you know, in a sense, Jim and Heidi that were fairly popular in town, and we didn't want to set somebody up for failure. So there, the involvement was kind of in the vein of what do you think is most important traits. I'm likely to do the same thing in this process. And Jay said it really well, formally versus informally. You're likely all to get questionnaires from me on both of these positions to say, hey, what's important to you? I guess kind of what I'm asking is, do you want to be involved in the interview process? Do you want to, you know, what do you see as far as that process? Because if you want to be involved, I'll design a way that you are and make sure that happens.
I'd have to, I should have refreshed my memory before the meeting on what the charter and the code actually says. Doesn't it? It's kind of says a couple different things, doesn't it?
It's
I've read it fairly recently.
Yeah, well, and Debbie and I kind of disagree. I mean, the borough clerk feels the assembly should stay out of this. I mean, I get it. That's been precedent for a long time. I look at it also by the fact that you guys say thumbs up and thumbs down, meaning at the end. I don't want to bring a candidate to you at the end and you go, what the hell are you thinking? I mean, you know, that's bad for everybody. Waste a bunch of time. So I don't really have – it's not the end of the world to me to have you involved, but I do need to know up front if that's what you want to do so I can design a process that way. I view it as my job, and I'm not trying to skirt my job in any way, shape, or form. But if the assembly wants to be a part of this or anticipates that you don't necessarily trust my judgment on these things, then I want you to be involved so I can get buy-in right up front.
Member Stanton Gregor.
In that case, I would move that we direct the borough manager to handle recruitment of police chief and deputy clerk. Or I don't know how you want me to word that, but more or less a stay out of it version.
That's just fine.
Does that work for you, Mindy, as far as wording goes?
Is there a second to that direction?
Second.
Okay, the motion has been made, I guess, to give the manager direction to recruit for a police chief and deputy clerk. And discussion.
Okay, just a point of clarification. So, Steve, that that does not in any way tie your hands to ask us for our opinions, like through a questionnaire or that sort of thing, right?
That's what I just heard.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
I just want to refresh my memory on the, just use an example, one of our most recent department heads that we've hired, Chandra, for lack of a word here, for
Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec, there you go. I knew it started with a P. So you advertised for those, correct?
Yes, I did.
And that would be your intention for this as well?
Deputy clerk and police chief, yes.
Basically
correct.
The police chief.
Yes. Yeah. I think I mentioned earlier, I'm sorry, through the mayor. My intent was to keep the search to state of Alaska, at least at first rattle out of the bag, put it out on the street and see what we get. It's clearly a lot easier for us if we can find an Alaska certified police officer. And, you know, so we'll post it both internally and external throughout the state of Alaska. Doesn't mean that other people won't see it, but I was not going to run ads in the Seattle paper or, you know, Texas or someplace like that. So I was going to try to keep it to Alaska for now and see what we get.
Okay, makes sense. Cheaper that way. So any other discussion on this? And this all needs approval by the Assembly in the end. Is that correct?
100% true. Okay.
So just to vote on the motion that Member Stanton Gregor made, clerk to have Steve start recruiting for these two positions. Clerk, call the roll.
Jeff?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Brandy?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Okay, so we're moving forward with the recruitment process for the chief of police and the new deputy clerk. Next item on the agenda is communications, and Member Castro had a letter that he wanted to read. Mm-hmm. Could you read that, Eric, please?
Sure thing. Yeah, so as a follow-up to some of the discussion on Friday, the managers at Icicle Seafood were directed by Patrick Wilson to reach out to me in order to clear up any confusion about the past safety practices and ongoing safety culture at the Petersburg plant. And I'll read the letter in full. Good morning, Eric. Thank you for your request for information regarding our chain of command here at Icicle regarding safety within the facility and the maintenance department. Ms. Morrell's comment during the February public forum may have been misinterpreted to lead some to believe that we have safety issues within our electrical department due to lack of direct oversight. This assumption is, in fact, inaccurate. Our lead electrician, Nathan Midkiff, is responsible to make sure that everyone working in his department follows appropriate safety protocols, including our lockout tagout program. He is supported by the maintenance manager, Emily Spurl, safety manager, Rexanne Stafford, and most importantly, our corporate safety officer, Margaret DeGravel, who is well-versed in OSHA electrical requirements for safety as well as PSM, process safety management, for our refrigeration program. We at Petersburg Fisheries have an exemplary safety record that we work hard at and are proud of. Although we operate under the limitations of our budgetary and human resources, the safety of our workers always comes first. Thank you. Signed, Nathan Midkiff, head electrician, Emily Spurl, maintenance manager, and Rexanne Stafford, safety manager.
Okay, thank you, Eric. So you reached out to him after our meeting and just...
They reached out to me.
Oh, okay. Next, is there any other communications by any Assembly members? Next item on the agenda is Assembly discussion items, and Member Morrell wanted to... She put one on there as a discussion of the Open Meetings Act. Member Morrell?
Oh, yeah. I recently had a couple things that have happened that I was... I'll explain that, but that basically that violates the Open Meetings Act, and I think that there's a lot of people that maybe are unaware that these are violations. I had emailed Steve a letter, and he proceeded to forward it. In my mind, that is a violation. So I looked in my NEO training, and it is a violation, and I called AML, and they confirmed that anything that has an opinion that's on... especially about an action item on the agenda that is shared, is then in violation of the Open Meetings Act. And it says in here, electronic communications, I mean, all sorts of things from my training at AML. And so I just kind of think that we need to discuss that because there are some things that have happened, like reply alls and things like that, that actually violate the Open Meetings Act, and I think that there's a little bit of gray area that we're all unsure of.
Not because of me forwarding it, but because other Assembly members, it sounds like, responded directly to you. So the violation was not in forwarding it. It was potentially other Assembly members jumping in. And that's the tough part. So Sarah, what the attorney said was, you know, how do we make this easier? Definitely want to make sure that I share information with you, but we also want to make sure Assembly members know that when they then jump into it, it starts to become potentially an issue. So, you know, it's kind of like, an example, you know, Jody did the write-up on the budget that we sent to the newspaper, and then I forwarded that out to everyone. There's no violation there. That's pure sharing of information, absolutely. Now, on the other hand, if the Assembly members started back and forth making decisions about that, now it starts to become an issue. So it's how do we kind of manage that? Again, Sarah said it's perfectly acceptable for me to give you guys information to forward that out to you. One of the suggestions she said would be to, you know, do a lot more cutting and pasting, meaning instead of forwarding, you know, it directly, coming in and saying, changing the names on it, in a sense, saying, not forwarding Brandy's email to you, creating a whole new email stream that says, an assembly member has said. Possibly that helps, because then the assembly is not necessarily engaging among yourselves. And so we're going to try to go that route a little bit. The challenge is I don't, and I guess she had heard from either, I don't think it was from Brandy, but okay, from Mark, about not sharing any information is how she took it, only at assembly meetings. And she said that's not going to work either, because clearly the assembly has a right to getting this information. So we're not sure exactly. I mean, I told her, you know, I'm more than happy to share every email with her, but that gets kind of expensive. I mean, in the sense of I mean, so again, her take on what you're referring to was what I did was okay, but risky, because other assembly members potentially have the opportunity to then engage you. So it's not necessarily what we did. It's more along the lines of we start losing control over what other people can do. So anyway.
Member Marone, I have some input as well.
Okay, so understandable, but even then it says, like I said, right in here in the NEO training, do not forward any emails. And then it says, especially with opinions, if it's just strictly informative, that's a different story. And then it says as well, listening and exposing yourself to facts also is part of the decision-making process. So therefore, it is in violation. Basically, you don't have to discuss anything to be part of the and I mean, it goes as far as like, I mean, it was a half-day presentation on this. They were like, don't even be Facebook friends with the members. Don't make a comment on Facebook, because if they read it, and then it could be potential violation. I mean, I was actually blown away with all of the potential violations in this. But when I spoke to AML, they basically said that how this all went down, because of the content, it was a violation. So.
And Member Stan Greger?
So to clarify that, I'm hearing, as a member here, I'm hearing some conflicting perspectives on this. I'm hearing the manager saying, our borough attorney, his opinion is there was no violation. Things were getting gray area, but as far as Sarah saw, there was not. But I'm hearing your perspective, Member Roll, saying that, yes, in fact, there were. So it sounds like we have differing opinions on this, if I'm hearing this correct.
I believe I'm hearing the same thing.
Okay. Yeah. I had spoke to somebody at AML, so they had... I had a second opinion about this. This wasn't just me and my...
No, it's their opinion.
Right. So, anyway, I just thought that it needed to be brought forward so that we don't continue to violate or even be in a gray area.
Any other discussion on this? Member Strand.
I just have a question from Brandy, or of Brandy. is your fear that he shared information, or is it because it's close to polling if everybody...
I think it's just that we need to follow the proper the rules, and so that we don't violate anything. That's all I was getting at, and it was definitely, like I said, after going to NEO, it was a red flag for me, and so I, you know, in order to correct it, I thought it needed to be brought forward.
Right, and is it a red flag because it's so close to polling if it's not actual polling, or is it...
Well, it's just that it was about an action item, so therefore it's going to... Anything that you hear will start to influence your decision. Regardless of if your decision changes or not, that doesn't... It's just that how it's listed and how it's worded is that if you listen to different people's opinions outside of a meeting, and I'm talking assembly members, all is one. That's part of the decision-making process. And
so that's because it's polling.
Well, whatever it would be called.
Thing, and I totally agree. It is polling, or very close to polling, something we really have to watch out for.
Right.
And when
we can talk to our constituency, as many as...
Yes.
That's true. So. And it's been years since I've been to the newly elected officials training that Brandy's referring to. I still have the book, and I look at it once in a while for advice, and it's helpful advice. And I did have a conversation with the attorney, because the same thing happened, I wouldn't say thing happened to me, but the same thing occurred with me, I guess. I sent an email
to the manager, and it was in regards to the action we took at the last meeting. And it was forwarded to our attorney, and then we've got the emails between us that the attorney and the manager's opinion was that it was giving confirming the action, not changing direction. And I said, well, it seems to me like, you know, if somebody's, and she said, have the discussion amongst the assembly and come to a, just like we've done on other things. What, how do we want to proceed with this? How do we need to get it cut and dried? But if, and maybe it's even, let me back up a little bit, because the attorney told me that she believed, I don't know if that's the right word, that this was giving the manager confirmation, not direction. And I said, well, did you listen? I know you weren't at the meeting. Did you listen to the meeting archive? And she said, no. And I said, well, then you got your, where'd you get your input? So I told her my side of the story. So we need to be careful about this. And maybe in this case, we should, and this is something we could have on, it'd have to be on an action item in another meeting, is to maybe get an opinion of someone else. And it used to be 8 years ago when we had a, I don't know even the right word to call it. We had a little disruption on the council at the time. The state actually had an agency, and the guy that I dealt with was called Lawrence Blood. And I called him, and I asked him, you know, same kind of concerns that Member Moreau had about if this is a violation, are we pushing the limits? And none of us want to go there, I don't think. So maybe that's a discussion we could have. And I think we do. We need to know what's right and what's wrong. And if, I don't know if the assembly agrees with that, but maybe it'll be, we could, you know, any one of us could ask to put it on an agenda. So, Member Mucci.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I think anytime you send an email to the borough or city manager, that all those emails are available to the public. You shouldn't send anything to the city manager or city staff that you don't want the public to read. You should be thinking about it like you're sending that email to the whole community. And every email that I have with the city manager or finance director, I always tell them, please feel free to share it if you'd like to. I'm not telling them what to do, but nothing I ever send in an email is something I wouldn't want the community to know about. And I'd like to know, Mr. Mayor, if I can, is there a way to talk about the specifics of what we're talking about as opposed to the innuendos that we're talking about?
Specifics, I believe, that are being talked about are emails being sent directly to the person in the administration, the manager, and they're shared to the assembly, and it was discussion on the restructuring. And it could have, you know, any of that, you read something, and it could influence your decision process, making process. And so I think, you know, it's like you and I are disagreeing on this right now, I think. I mean, that all emails should be shared. They are, if the Freedom of Information Act, I suppose someone could ask for the email and get it. Which, you know, Member Mucci?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't, you know, I'm not looking at the Freedom of Information Act. I'm just looking at just, I'm not going to send Steve, the city manager, an email that I don't think, you guys can read it if you want. I'm not trying to influence your decision. All I'm trying to do is ask a question to Steve. I get the information, and that's how I kind of make my decisions. It's not, my intention is not to have Steve poll you guys so you guys can sort out how I'm thinking. I'll say that up in the public meetings, but, you know, 2 weeks between the meetings are when I kind of come up with my thought process for an assembly meeting.
Right. I'm just, then like I say, we need to get more official opinions on this matter, because if there's emails being forwarded from one assembly member through the administration or whoever it goes through to the other assembly members, and if you're all, you know, and it's outside an open meeting, and it's on a topic that you're going to be voting on, taking action on in the near future, you're basically, in a way, getting information that's going to influence your decision. And Member Mucci, that's what I've learned from newly elected officials. So, Member Moreau?
My issue wasn't the content. It was just that it violates how we're supposed to put everything in front of the public. And yes,
point of order. It doesn't necessarily violate that. That's your opinion. I just want that to be very clear to the public. That isn't necessarily true. It's your opinion that it violates. Sorry, Mr. Mayor, but that's point of order. That feels like an accusation to either the administration or the assembly, and I don't believe anyone is violating Open Meetings Act.
Sorry.
Member Strand?
My interpretation here is the fear of polling. If you, four of us aren't supposed to stand on the street corner and discuss borough business unless we're in a meeting. I mean, so that if four people get, or more than four people get an email and respond to each other, if you click reply all, pretty soon it's polling.
I agree. So maybe we are bordering on the edge, and maybe that's why maybe we should have it research the topic and get another opinion.
Like sure. And like I said, again, from Sarah's perspective, it wasn't the fact that I forwarded it. It was that it sounded like, at least what she heard, was that other assembly members engaged, and then she turned around and said, well, or I guess to be safest, you know, you run the risk of not being able to, I can't control what the assembly does. So, you know, Brandy sends me an email that has questions on it. I in turn forward that on to the rest of the assembly, saying this is an assembly level decision to be made. Now it opens up the door to individual assembly members to start to jump into the conversation. And that's the problem. It's in Sarah's perspective, what I did wasn't wrong, but it's risky because I can't control what the other all seven of you are going to do. So that's really the dynamics of what she said to me. She included in that, I'm paraphrasing, which is dangerous. It sounded like, Mark, that you had said to her you didn't want any information spread out except at assembly meetings. And when she said that to me, I challenged it. I said, then how are we supposed to give the assembly the tools they need to make decisions if we can't give you information?
Information coming from the administration, I feel, is different than information sent to you, for instance, and then it's, you know, circulated through the assembly. All I'm saying is we should get, in my opinion, an opinion from a different attorney. That has, and I don't know where we go with that. I'm not trying to accuse anybody of anything. I just think we need clarification on if this is right or wrong. I mean, I know some people think it's okay, and there's obviously a couple that don't. So, any information that's circulated through the assembly should be circulated in an open meeting, and so maybe the information could be brought up at the meeting and not through an email chain. I don't know. It seems like there might be a problem there. So any other discussion on this item? And we could definitely put it on the agenda to see if we want to take action to get another official opinion. Is that any other discussion items by the assembly? I wanted to add something under Mayor's report.
Mr. Mayor, excuse me. There is another one on the agenda, the borough personnel hiring freeze and recognition.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That should have been the one we talked about first.
That's okay.
Member Walter, yeah, sorry.
That's okay. Now, this is just an idea that has been floating around for a little while. You know, I mean, we've had the three successive meetings, and it seems like we're just trying to figure out how to raise revenues. And I just wanted to put it out there that, that we ought to be considering, If we do have an open position, if that position is really necessary to fill. I understand that Mountain View Manor has certain, criteria on how many, staff is there. So, we can't really adjust it there. And I'm sure there's other places in the borough that has the same sort of staffing requirements that we can't really amend or even adjust. But, it's just something that I think when a position comes open, I know Steve has been doing this because I've had a chat with him after I suggested this. That, he does talk to the department heads and says, how critical is it to fill that position? So I know he's cognitive of it, but I just want the public to know that that's a process that we're going through, and just so that if there is some place where we can consolidate or cut expenses, that we are considering it. That was the only reason for putting it on there.
Okay. It's always good to have the discussions. I should have had this under my mayor's report. It was listed there, but I just blew right over it, like I do sometimes. But we discussed at the last meeting our meeting schedule for the second meeting in February. And if the assembly's willing to discuss it again, You know, I would still like to have the meeting moved, so I can't be here at the second meeting on the 20th, and I'd like to reschedule it so I could be at the second meeting in February, because that's not only the public, the public hearings on all six ordinances that we need to do on this restructuring, and I think it's important that we're all in the room. But I don't know if Member Wallhunter will be here. If he's, are you tendering crab, Kurt?
I am, but I'm not sure. It could be here. It opens on
so
the 10th.
I'm just going to suggest it, and if people don't want to go there, that's fine. We'll stick with the 20th. Any other input?
No.
Member Stanton Gregor?
Excuse me, I'm getting over a cold also.
Yeah, everybody is. So.
Yeah. It is an important topic, and if you feel it's important for you to be here and it works for the rest of the Assembly, like, absolutely, by all means, we can kick it back. That means we, to be clear, then we'd have more or less back-to-back week meetings, end of February, first week in March. Is that correct, if we can move the date of it?
Unless we wanted to have it on Friday the 16th. I return on the 15th from Juneau next week, which means it's 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 days between these meetings. It'll be 7, 11 or 12, 13 days between that and the next meeting. So it balances it out. But, you know, if it's up to the Assembly, I'm just requesting that we look at changing it again from the 20th at 6 to the 16th at some time. That's a Friday, and I know, I mean, second meeting of the month, it should be in the evening, but then it's the end of everybody's work week, so that's asking a lot. I just throwing a request out. Member Walter?
So the 20th doesn't work. What does it look like the other direction? When are you, what day are you leaving, and then when would you be
about
back?
The 26th.
That works. That puts us 1 week between that and the next meeting, but that's...
I agree with your point, Mr. Mayor, that having as full an assembly as possible for more contentious topics is a good thing, so... I'm very comfortable with it if everyone else is.
Would that affect anybody else's schedule if we moved it to the 26th?
No. We can't do it sometime midweek between the 20th and the 26th? I mean, does it have to be on a Monday?
I'm gone that week as well.
Oh, the whole week. Okay, I wasn't sure what you...
And it's borough business I'm traveling for, so...
Yeah.
You know, that's fine. I could just if we have it in the evening on the 20th, I guess I'll just call in and let... Those are my options. So whatever you guys think. And it sounds like Member Walter won't be able to be here, but he doesn't know that.
I should be here, I think. Yeah. I should.
Well, Member Castro.
Yeah. I feel that for sensitive topics like this and for the opportunity for the public hearing, that having all seven of us on the dais would be beneficial to the public. So I would be for moving it to the 26th.
Any other comments? Member Strand.
I'm not in favor of moving it. And Jody, are you going to be here for?
Yeah, I'll be here. I wouldn't be here on the 16th meeting, but, and it's the third reading of the two ordinances I'm really involved in anyway, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not here.
Member Wallhunter?
I can definitely tell you I'm not going to be here on the 26th.
Okay, so then you'd be gone. You're going to be gone, or I'll be gone, one or the other. So.
Mm-hmm. I could go to the 16th.
Member Mucci?
Yeah, the 26th would probably be the best, but for me. But I'll try and attend telephonically if I'm not in town.
I'll do the same.
So is that a consensus? Do we need to take all those in favor of having a meeting on the 26th? Say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, no.
So it passes 5-2. Member Strand.
So if we're going to meet on the 26th, we'll be meeting a week later then, for the first meeting in March?
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try to make it.
Okay.
What time?
The second meeting of the month is generally 6 p.m. Okay, with that all being... Member Mucci, you have another?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I might be gone for that meeting on the 20th, just thought I'd let you know. But I did have a question about the Planning Commission meeting that happens tomorrow at noon. One of the items on there is the request for the borough manager on behalf of the mayor, and I'm just trying to get some clarification on what that's all about. If somebody can answer.
And I looked at that, and maybe there was something on there, and I should have asked the manager about that request from borough manager on behalf of Mayor Jensen. And I talked to, when this was first
brought to our attention that this is how we were going to have the discussion on the rezoning that is being put forward by our economic development director based on the information we got from our, what was it called? When we formed a borough, the comprehensive plan. I think, is that making any sense, Liz? We talked about this, that we're going to have three meetings at planning and zoning, and it was going to be vetted by them three times, and it was going to be vetted by us three times. Well, at the last first time that planning and zoning addressed this, there wasn't a quorum, if I'm getting this right. And Liz also mentioned to me that there wasn't anybody in the audience to testify. And I don't know if that's because there's a noon meeting. So I just requested, I mentioned to the manager that I thought it'd be, and I think Clerk Thompson was involved in it too, that we make sure that this is such a big change that's being proposed that it, and maybe it won't make any difference on my request. I think there should be action taken. You know, maybe, and I think by code, maybe planning and zoning doesn't have to take action. So the more I thought of it, maybe it's more of a public hearing thing. I don't know. That's where that came from, Member Mucci.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
So that doesn't really clear it up. Is it about the public hearing process that needs to be longer? Or I still don't understand why that's happening.
I thought it was going to be action taken by planning and zoning three times and then by the assembly three times. Is that the way it was proposed, Liz? Maybe you could clarify. Maybe I'm all wet.
The Planning Commission is having three public hearings, but they only take action at the on the last one, and that would be a recommendation to the Assembly. But because they wanted to give people an opportunity to comment on this major change, we had extended it, the public hearing, over three different months so that people would have ample time to review it and then come and talk to the commission. But the actual action by the commission isn't scheduled until March.
And that would be their third time visiting the issue?
And that would be after the third public hearing, right?
And this was advertised, I'm sure, like it always has to be in the paper, and was it on the radio as well?
Correct. And it's been distributed in flyers and emails, various other places.
So maybe if it's just the fact that the Member Mucci, you might be right, that the public wasn't, they have the same advertisement to it. If they weren't interested in it, then maybe that's their bad. So anyway, maybe I'd like as much public comment on any of these topics, especially one that's going to have this dramatic of a change. And if you've looked into it, there's going to be some dramatic changes to, you know, industrial zoning and on and on and on. So anyway, where we go from here, we'll see if, I don't know. What's your concern?
No, I didn't want to. You know, like you, I want the public to participate as much as possible. But right. If they don't show up, you know, there's other ways to communicate with the city. Via email for opinions, and if Liz thinks that they need more time because she feels there's more public participation out there that just can't show up this day, I'm sure it could go longer. But if there's no real need for it, just keep that process going, I'm thinking.
Right, yeah. And so anyway, thanks for bringing that up.
Yep.
And I did read that. So now, hold on a minute, I'm over at planning and zoning. We are to the point where we need to have a motion to go to executive session. Member Merle.
I need to make a request to recuse myself as my husband is a PME employee.
Any objections by the Assembly? Thank you for bringing that up, Member Merle. And I don't know that there will be any action after the executive session. Doesn't sound like it from what I know. So if you wanted to be excused and go back to work and get the rest of your 8 hours in.
Oh, the work's over.
Thank you for coming and thank you for bringing that up. Appreciate it.
I would move to adjourn to executive session.
And for which reason?
Oh, let me scroll down. Thank you.
has to be specific.
To discuss the status and the collective bargaining negotiations for the Petersburg Municipal Employees Association.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you, Brandon.
Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, providing knowledge, professionalism, and information on insurance issues. Commercial or pleasure, boat and crew, Petersburg Insurance, offering asset protection on the water or at home.